is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White! He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! Poy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Yes, we are live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, the Ed Pro Sports Training Center, here for the next 3 hours, getting you set up for the big game, the big game, the Bills and the New England Patriots. Buffalo still very much alive in the playoff chase. We'll talk about that a lot today. And good afternoon, Donald Jones, and what an inspired choice of outerwear you have on, a Christmas jacket. Conveniently borrowed from one of the two instigators.
Yeah, you know, the instigators, they actually inspired me to wear this jacket. Everybody's in the Christmas spirit, so I figured that I would put one on. They made me switch it around before we came on air because I look better in this jacket. I really look better, and this was Craig Revay's jacket. I look better than him in it, though. That's how you got to do. Sometimes you put on somebody else's stuff and make their stuff look better.
Now, what makes you think you wear it better?
I mean, internally, it's self-proclaimed. I look better than he did in the jacket.
And how long will you keep that on? Not necessarily, I'm assuming you'll keep it on 3 hours today.
Yes.
And what I dare you to wear it the rest of the weekend. Would you ever do that?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, I'm going to hang it back up. You know, we have a closet back on the other side of this thing. So we all share clothes with each other. And so, with that being said, you know, I'm going to hang it back up because he might actually want to wear it on Christmas or something like that.
Yes, because if he doesn't, he will have to put it in the closet and not wear it again for another year.
True, true. But can you wear something like this for New Year's?
No, you can barely wear it for Christmas.
Oh, well, so you have to get something like this with, like, fireworks and stuff for New Year's, right?
Apparently, yes. It's if you're anywhere near a television set, and if you can tune into the MSG simulcast, it might be worth your while to see this incredibly ugly Christmas jacket that Donald has decided to wear today.
It's just so nice.
It does look good on you, though. I will give you that. So it's our last show before Christmas. We do not have a show on Christmas Day, as you might imagine. But we've got a lot of ground to cover, and the Bills are right in the thick of things, which to me makes this really special. I think it's going to be a great holiday weekend. I can't wait. Can't wait to go to New England tomorrow. Can't wait to call the game on Sunday. Can't wait to come home, regardless of what happens, and celebrate Christmas. But the fact that there's a chance the Bills could steal one in New England, win one in New England, makes this, to me, a very intriguing weekend. Am I crazy to think that the Bills have a shot here, Donald?
No, I don't think you're crazy, because when you look at the way the Patriots have played all year, even though they're 11-3 right now, when you look at how they have played all year, you would think to yourself, and then you see the game that they lost. Obviously, they didn't have Gronk in the game, but you see that they actually – got beat up on pretty bad against the Dolphins, how they've played all year. You could say to yourself, if the Bills go in there and you look back to the first time the Bills played and the final score, but even the first half and how they were able to really limit that offense, you could say, okay, the Bills actually, if they go in there and play their game, they can go into New England and beat New England. Yeah. So, no, I don't think you're crazy.
There's something to be gained from, and I will do it today, later today, go back and look at the first half, maybe the whole game. Well, actually, I will look at the third quarter because I want to reacquaint myself with exactly what the Patriots were doing on those two long third quarter scoring drives, a lot of it with Rob Gronkowski. But something to be gained, obviously, from the first half as well. The first Buffalo drive, 66 yards, 7 plays, all the way down to inside the 10, and then the interception from Tyrod Taylor, who does not throw interceptions. And he threw one right into the hands of the journeyman, Eric Lee. An incredible turn of events in that game. Did it set the tone for the rest of the game? I guess it did a little bit. Richie Incognito had admitted as much yesterday. But take that play away, and I really would have loved to see what it would happen at in the game 3 weeks ago. You can't take that play away, but you can learn from it. And I'm really eager to see what the Bills have learned from it, what they take. I mean, look, I just had a conversation with Sean McDermott, and he was talking about the lessons learned by the mistakes they made in that first game 3 weeks ago against New England. How about the lessons learned from what they did well in that game, including that first drive? I would think there's an awful lot to look at there. No?
That first drive, there's a lot of lessons in that first drive, because you had a very good drive, but then you threw an interception to finish the drive off. You know, well, you didn't finish the drive because you threw the interception. So, yeah, there's a lot to learn from that drive. There's a lot to learn from the first half. There's a lot to learn from going in at halftime, them coming out, making adjustments. There's a lot to learn from that game, from that first game. They can obviously look at what weren't we able to get done against Gronk? Why was he able to go off in the second half the way he did? What has he done in the last couple of weeks? What are teams not able to get done against Gronk? Because he is the reason why they had won their last few games. Now, they lost to the Dolphins because they didn't have him, and it shows how important he is to that offense. So they have to learn from the first game what they weren't able to get done, what they did get done in the first half, what they didn't get done in the second half. Let's see if they can put it all together for a full game.
I went back and looked at my notes from the first New England game 3 weeks ago in that first drive, and you think about it, there was the Bills were just clicking offensively. There was an up-tempo attack, mm-hmm. and it was a variety of personnel combinations, and they kept switching personnel, bringing different personnel out there almost on every play. That's where they unveiled the Wildcat with Joe Webb III. You would think the Patriots will spend a little bit of time practicing against that Wildcat this week.
Yeah.
It was just a sensational start to that game. And as I said, there's something there to be learned by the Buffalo Bills going into this game. We're going to talk about the game all day long from now until 3 o'clock, and we're here until 3 to get you through the game. We've got the update on the injuries as the Bills continue their Friday workout as we speak. We'll get to that in a second. We'll let you know what's coming up here on the show. Bottom of the hour, Mark Kelso with his usual 12:30 Friday spot. Mark will join us to give us his take on this game coming up on Sunday, the important points, his keys to the game. Mark Kelso joins us in studio at 12:30. 1 o'clock, Greg Cosell. From the Edge Matchup Show, ESPN's NFL Matchup. Greg Cosell, the analyst and executive producer of that show, joins us at 1 o'clock today. We'll talk about the Bills and the Patriots and about the rest of the NFL. Coming up at 1:30, interesting guest, Eddie Royal, who just wrapped up, he didn't play this year in the NFL. Maybe his career is over, maybe it's not. Former wide receiver, a former college teammate of Tyrod Taylor. He thinks Taylor and the Bills have a real good shot of beating the Patriots on Sunday. We'll talk with Eddie Royal about that coming up at 1:30. 2 o'clock, the lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. The Bills linebacker joins us in studio at 2. We'll get his keys to the game, the lowdown. 2:30, coffee with the coach, Chris Brown, with head coach Sean McDermott. And all day long, the next 3 hours, your comments on the Bills and the Patriots. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's start with this. And we do this a lot on Fridays. As you envision this matchup, the Bills and the Patriots, this is our Twitter poll today. What will have the biggest impact in a potential Buffalo Bills win over the New England Patriots on Sunday? That's what we've got up on Twitter. That's where we'd like to start the conversation on the telephone. What would have the biggest impact in a Bills win over the Patriots? You need them all, probably, or you need more than we've even got room for on our screen, but the biggest impact, the most impactful thing that could happen against the Patriots. On Twitter, Twitter poll's been up for a few minutes. 58% of you, a wide majority, say forcing two or more turnovers, getting the ball, taking it away. 20% of you say getting 150 yards or more in total yards from LeSean McCoy. 19% of you say holding Gronkowski to zero touchdowns in the game. 3% have something else in mind. What do you think? What would have the biggest impact in a Bills win over the Patriots? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. I'm with the majority here, Donald. I think takeaways are the key. Bills with 5 takeaways in the last 4 games, including 3 interceptions last week against the Dolphins. And here's the thing. The Patriots, Tom Brady in particular, have been putting it up for grabs. Mm-hmm. Brady has 4 interceptions over the last 3 games. Yeah. He's thrown 4. He's thrown 2 touchdown passes. He's been a little careless with the football.
Right, right.
So you could say to yourself, yeah, right, yeah, get takeaways. And I know there's luck involved. I know that. But the recent trends, the Bills getting takeaways, and we all know how good the Bills were when they got takeaways earlier this year, that's a trend that's going on again. They're starting to take the ball away again, and the Patriots are starting to give the ball up again. You know, I always go to this analogy, but if you're betting horses, you look at past performance charts. What just happened to this horse in this race? Look at these two horses. There's a trend here. Patriots being careless with the football, Brady with 4 interceptions in the last 3 games, the Bills taking it away. There's a lot that has to go on beside that, but if I had to settle on one thing that has to happen for the Bills that would have the biggest impact in a Bills win, I would go to forcing turnovers. 2 or more would be great.
I think I'd have to agree with the Twitter poll and you, but I think I would go with other. And other, I'm really being inspired. You know, I had this jacket on because Craig Revan and Andrew Peters wore it, and they inspired me to put it on after them. We did a switcheroo. Yesterday I was inspired by Ruben. And when he came in, he started talking about hit him in the mouth and all of that stuff. And I'm like, you know what? When you think about when the Patriots actually lose games, it's because they are being hit in the mouth. Tom Brady, you hit him in the mouth, up the middle. He does not like it. I want to see Tom Brady on the sideline going off on Josh McDaniels again, or going off on Bill Belichick, going off on the entire team. I love to see him frustrated out there. I love to see it. I want to see those receivers get hit every time they touch the ball. The running backs, every time you touch the ball, hit them hard. You know, I want to see guys in the backfield all the time. That's the game that I think the Bills need to play. And if you play that type of game, then he will throw it up for grabs. He will give you one or two opportunities for an interception, and you got to make those plays when you get those opportunities. Maybe you can force a fumble. You can force a tip ball or something like that from one of these receivers that he's throwing to. Hit him in the mouth. I think that's the way you beat the Patriots. You play your game, and that's hard-nosed, smash-mouth football, run the ball. On offense, your offensive line needs to play on the other side of the ball. You need to be driving these guys down the field when you're running the ball because their defensive line is not what it's been in the past. So you need to use that, drive off the ball, LeSean McCoy, get going, and that's how you beat them.
All right, I like it all, but we want to hear from you. What's the most important thing, the most significant thing the Bills could do to come out of New England with a victory on Sunday? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. On the other side of the wall over there, the Bills are busy at work in their Friday practice, their final big practice of the week. They'll walk through tomorrow, then hit the plane, the jet for the trip, the short trip to New England to Providence, and then playing at Foxborough on Sunday. Sean McDermott, in his news conference before today's practice, gave an update on some of the injuries. Wide receiver Calvin Benjamin, according to McDermott, he's doing okay, trying to work through his knee issues. Benjamin limited today, and McDermott says he will be questionable for Sunday's game. Cornerback E.J. Gaines with his knee, limited today, and he will be questionable for Sunday as well. Also limited today and questionable for the game, defensive tackle Kyle Williams with his groin. Tight end Nick O'Leary with the back, offensive lineman John Miller with his ankle. No practice today for wide receiver Andre Holmes, who has a neck issue, and he is out for the game. So no Andre Holmes. Do we see Brandon Riley in the lineup? We'll see on Sunday. McDermott talked a lot about the game, about the playoff talk, and he talked about the first matchup with the Patriots 3 weeks ago. New England ran it for 191 yards in that game against the Bills. Bills' defense against the run ranked 25th in the NFL. Not so good. And McDermott said they continue to work on it and hope that they can shut down New England in this game coming up on Sunday.
We're a work in progress, you know, really, as a football team, collectively, all three phases, and which is somewhat to be expected in the first year as we continue to build this thing. And building alignment is key in terms of coaches understanding what I want, how we do things, and then also with the players. That's key, and in particular, in this case, where you're going, Vic, with our run defense, is how you become a good run-oriented defense. The understanding, and then also the habits that go along with that, the techniques, the fundamentals. So, you know, we're a work in progress as far as that goes, and overall as a team. And that's where the building part comes in, also, and the vision of that growth mindset of how we got to continue to improve every week. And that's what makes it fun and exciting to see how we and the players really embrace that every week of where we're going and how we're trying to get there.
Work in progress, no doubt a work in progress. In the meantime, they contend in playoff contention as they are a work in progress. All right, let's get to you and your thoughts. What's the biggest thing the Bills have to do, biggest factor in a potential Buffalo victory over the Patriots on Sunday? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Rick in Hamburg. Go ahead, Rick, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. Thank you.
Plus a happy holidays to both of you.
Sure,
thank you.
For me, the biggest difference, and I know we've named some other things, I think to me it's Rick Dennison, the offensive coordinator. You know, I have season tickets. I watch every game. And this guy calls a game a lot different at home than he does on the road. And I understand that's old school philosophy, keep it close to the vest, let's not turn the ball over. But you're playing the Pats. You're playing Brady. You've got, you know, your season may not be on the line, depending on how things work out. But let's be a little bit aggressive. Let's call the game on the road. Call your plays like you would at home. There is a huge difference between the home games in the away games how he calls plays.
What do you see there? What do you see there, Rick? Because I can't say I've detected that trend. What do you see home and away the way he calls a game?
Yeah, John, I'm telling you, the first – I don't know whether he scripts his first
– 15.
What? I'm sorry?
Typically, they script the first 15 plays. Okay. Home and away.
When they're at home, you see more 15 to 20-yard pass attempts often, very early in the game. You see some more movement with guys going in motion. When it's on the road, what I've noticed the first couple of series, the passes are of the shorter variety, 5 to probably 8 to 10 yards, and there's not a lot of movement. There's not a lot of guys going in motion. And it's typically, you know, when they do have a running play, I don't see many guys pulling. When at home, you see guys pulling. You see more motion. There's more attempts to move the ball downfield. Tyrod is rolled out more very early in the game. There's a lot more fluid motion to the home games. When he's on the road, it just seems there's a little bit of a, you know, collar on it wait and see how things go.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation, Rick, but I'd like to see some numbers to back that up because I haven't seen it. Donald, have you? I don't know that he calls the game that much more differently. I'll tell you, this was a home game, but the last time they played New England, I thought it was a masterful opening drive in that game.
Absolutely.
Was that just because they were home? I don't know. I don't think it was it? What do you think, Donald?
Watch.
Go ahead, Rick. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, watch. You know, I'm in my car driving, so I'd love to give you some type of numbers. But my eye is playing this game for over 30 years. Not at your level, Donald. I only made it to Division I school. Never made it to the pros. But there is a difference in the way this guy calls games when it's home and away. I'd love to see him just. I'd love to see that opening drive that we had at home this week.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think,
Rick? I mean, it's hard for me to say it's different. I've never really paid attention to it that way to say he's calling games a little bit differently on the road than he is at home. There could be some truth to that. There could not be. I don't know why. Now, you could think about when you think about big picture and being on the road, your first 15 plays. You might be dealing with some crowd noise or different things. You might not want to do certain things because of that in terms of communication. You're expecting it to be too loud. I don't know why he would actually do something like that. That would be the only reason that I could think of, though.
I've never seen that. Again, if you got numbers, let me see him. Paul calling from Toronto. Go ahead, Paul. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for my call.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We got to win the turnover battle 100%. Like, if we don't get some turnovers, it's going to be tough to beat the Patriots. But it's great that we're talking in December playoff football. This is awesome. Like, hopefully, I got a question for you. If we finish tied with Tennessee, who wins the tiebreaker?
That is a great question.
Tell me who Tennessee's going to beat or, you know, lose to. Then we can answer that better. You know what I'm saying? How's Tennessee going to finish?
Baltimore's probably going to win their two last games. So we got to try and – but I don't know. I think it's – we've had a good year. Like, I've had a good time watching them, and I'm amazed we're going to be hopefully 9-7. If you'd have told me that 10 weeks ago, I would have said snap out of it.
Okay.
Oh, it's been good.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate that. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550, or on Twitter. What do the Bills need to do? What's the biggest factor in a potential Buffalo victory against the Patriots on Sunday? Kevin calling from North Collins. Hello, Kevin. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Great.
Good.
Good, good. Hey, I was at the game when the Bills lost to the Patriots in that game, and it was the third quarter. The third quarter where we couldn't stop Gronkowski.
Right.
So what we have to do here in this game to win, I'm talking about beating the Patriots now, and that is to stop Gronkowski on the line of scrimmage, hit him every down. I want a blocker on him because you could hit these guys within the first 5 yards. I want these receivers hit, and I want Amendola hit and Gronkowski because Gronkowski's the leading receiver. I believe if we do that, we can come out with a great possibility of winning.
Yeah. I mean, that's everything I really was just saying. Hit these guys in the mouth. In terms of those receivers, you need to be physical with them at the line of scrimmage. I think that's something that Miami Dolphins did to them. They were physical with all of those receivers. Xavier Howard, the rest of those boys were physical at the line of scrimmage. They don't have the biggest – I mean, now they have Kenny Britt, and he's probably going to play. He's a bigger physical wide receiver. But the rest of those guys, Brandon Cooks, Danny Amendola, who knows if Chris Hogan is going to play. He's about my size. They don't have the biggest, most physical receivers out there aside from Gronk, you know. So you need to make sure that those guys are not just getting free reign off the line of scrimmage to just do what they want to do and running those little option routes. I don't care if you're in the slot. It's a lot harder in the slot to really press somebody. Oh, but it can be done. You know, you get up in these guys' faces and disrupt their route. And make sure that – I told you yesterday, Brady wants his guys to be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. He does not like to have to stand back there, pat the ball, move around in the pocket. You know, that's where you see him sometimes get skittish, or you'll see him just throw the ball away, or he'll get sacked, you know. So I think they need to make sure that they are disrupting the routes at the line of scrimmage, even with Gronk. Get your hands on him. Have one guy hit him at the line of scrimmage, another guy covering him down the field. If it's a defensive end, before you rush the passer, hit Gronk first, and then get on your rush to Tom Brady. I think that's how they need to play these guys.
Yeah, I agree. Physicality is huge. Dealing with Gronkowski is huge. Much easier said than done. Right?
Yes.
I mean,
Gronk, yes.
And we, you know, just talking to Sharice Wright about it yesterday. It's, you know, Gronkowski is a great athlete. He's not the fastest guy in the field by any means, but I think I said this to you, to Sharice and you yesterday. His size and his wingspan, I think, is what's most formidable. I mean, it's almost like a basketball player getting position on a guy in the low post. You can't get around him sometimes. You can't. Guys like Sharice Wright and even Tre'Davious White, you cannot get around him, because once he establishes position, and with a quarterback who can throw darts like Tom Brady, there's really – you're defenseless in those situations. And that's why I think banging him at the line of scrimmage, disrupting timing, would be huge in slowing him down, let alone stopping him.
That's the biggest thing you got to do. Once he gets into his route, he is going to box you out. He's mastered it. He knows how to use his body to catch passes. He can catch the ball with anybody hanging on his back. So you need to make sure you do a good job of not allowing him to get into that route. It's like he's like a power forward playing basketball.
Yeah.
You know, he's big, strong, physical. He knows how to box out. He'll get you in the post, back you down, turn you down, and dunk on you. That's how he plays the game. So don't let him get to that position. Make sure that any time that he's running his route, he is being hit by all different angles. And it's going to frustrate him. Just like he's talked about the last time when the whole thing happened with Tre'Davious.
He was frustrated.
Right. But he was frustrated because they were hitting him.
Yeah.
And he's the one that wants to hit everybody else. Now you're frustrated, but they need to do the same exact thing, get him out of his game again this week.
You know, with that in mind, and Craig Rolstead is the official, and I don't have a book on Craig Rolstead. I imagine some people do. It would help the Bills a lot if they call it loose, if they don't call every single hit, every single bit of contact, both sides really, but especially against Gronkowski and those Patriots receivers, because you know the Bills want to bang him. You know they want to have hands on him.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be physical with him. He admitted how frustrated he was 3 weeks ago when the Bills, you know, were roughing him up a little bit, pushing him around a little bit.
Yeah.
So if the officials let him play and let some of that contact go, which, again, I don't have the book on Rolstad. If they let it go to a certain extent, that would help the Bills a lot, wouldn't it?
It would. It would help the Bills a lot more. If they start to call everything and call it real close, they're going to get a lot of penalties. And then you're going to say to yourself, I can't be as physical as I want to be with this guy. He's going to be physical with me, but I can't be physical with him. And so it's really an unfair advantage because he's already big and physical. And so as soon as he just leans on you a little bit, you're like, I can't even do anything. So they need to not call the game as close and let the guys play football.
Right.
And if that happens, then, yeah, it works in the Bills' favor.
And if that happens, if they call it tight, then, boy, they better call it tight both ways.
Right. You know, and that's sometimes when you're like, hold on, what is going on here? Why is it that this person can be physical, but this person can't be physical? This team is doing all types of stuff, but this team is not getting the calls. What is going on here? Yeah. I mean, those are things that we've been questioning for a long time, though.
I had a conversation the other day with some friends of mine about the referee in the Bills-Patriots first matchup, Gene Steratore.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them mentioned, and I don't have the book on this, said that Steratore always lets guys play. And I thought, that's kind of what happened in the Bills-New England
game.
Now, he's not doing this game. But certain referees, certain officiating crews in particular, will have a different style and figure, let the players decide. I'll let that go. I'll let that go. Other guys are like, nope, you can't have that kind. Nope, outside of 5 yards, call that, you know. And all of a sudden you have a flag fest, and all of a sudden one team is hindered doing what they need to or want to do against their opponent.
And typically this is what happens against the Patriots.
No, I don't know if I buy that. You really think that's the case?
Yeah, I do.
Why would they get calls?
They've been getting calls forever, the Patriots.
They took their quarterback out for 4 games last year.
Tom Brady has been getting calls forever. As soon as you breathe on Tom Brady, they're throwing a flag. As soon as he turns around and looks at the refs, throws his hands up, flag. And it's like, hey, come on, he didn't even get hit that hard.
I won't dispute that. And so, any superstar quarterback will get that kind of protection, especially the best of the best.
But this is football.
I know what it is.
And the difference is just because he's a superstar quarterback, I get ratings, all of that stuff with the league, but – come on, it's football. You can't hit him as soon as you hit him. So what am I supposed to do as a defender coming, rushing him? I'm supposed to just grab him and take him to the ground slowly? No, you hit him.
Yeah. To go into this game, and I don't think these players do, but even for fans to go into it saying, well, they get all the calls, it's like a loser's standpoint. You know, it's like, you know they're going to get all the calls. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe they won't.
Maybe not. We'll see.
I don't know if there's evidence to support the fact that they get all the calls. We don't. I don't know that. I don't think there is.
There probably is not evidence, but, I mean, anybody across the league has always said
that
the
Patriots
get a lot of – it's not just because they win. They
get calls. That's why everybody has the feeling that they get all the calls because they're always winning. Don't you think?
No, I don't think that.
Let's go to Randall in Blaisdell. Hello, Randall. No. You're on the air. You're on the air with us, Randall.
Hello, John. Hello, Donald.
Hi.
Hi.
What up, though?
Definitely, you know, you kind of led into this, you know, what I was going to ask. You know, I think it's about maintaining composure more than anything with this team. Be just like you said, Donald, with Tom Brady getting breathed on or whatever, having conversations with the refs, it's a little disheartening because, you know, they're quote-unquote a good team, but still, the Bills got to maintain their composure. You know, I remember, was it the first home game maybe a couple years ago? Maybe it was Hughes or somebody jumping up and down. They threw a flag because he's just in the vicinity of Tom Brady. I think it's ridiculous. I really think it's about ending this drought and just busting these games out at this point. I don't know what you guys think.
Thanks, Randall. I mean, Jerry Hughes is the guy to watch when it comes to losing composure, but as a team, I don't feel this Bills team has been out of bounds when it comes to you know, losing composure. You know, the penalties, Donald, have I mentioned this? Because I wrote about it earlier.
Yeah, we were
this week.
Talking about this.
How much the penalties have gone down?
Something like four?
They're 22nd in the league in the number of penalties. So they're in the bottom third. 88 penalties in force. They're on pace to finish the year. 6.3 penalties per game, the Bills are. Last season they averaged 7. 2 years ago they averaged 9 penalties per game.
And that's,
so they cut that. I don't think they're an out-of-control, penalty-ridden team.
No, they're not out of control.
So it surprised me if they lose composure this week.
They're not out of control by any means, and a lot of the penalties we're talking about are just normal penalties, and it's really just being in better position, being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there, and you won't get those penalties. Keep your hands in, just little stuff like that. But like I said when we talked about this earlier this week, there are certain penalties that you can't have that can hurt you, like Adolphus Washington. Yeah. You can't have something like that, and that's not really been characteristic of this team all year. You're not getting those big-time unsportsmanlike conduct type of penalties, but you can't have them in this game because that team will capitalize on it. So they need to make sure that then. I'm 95% sure that none of these guys are going into this game saying, I want to make sure I get a big time hit on Gronk. If they get the opportunity, I'm gonna take it. But I'm not going in here, I want to hurt Gronk because he hurt Tre'Davious White or anything like that. These guys are going in, I want to be physical with all of them. I want to hit them all. And if I get the opportunity to hit Gronk within the actual game, then I'm going to hit him as hard as I can hit him. That's like running into a wall, but I'm going
to
try.
You know, I can't get over it, and Tre'Davious said it on our show Tuesday, and to me it's the perfect approach. And he said, as far as the Gronkowski hit, the best revenge is to beat him, to win this week.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of is the way they're approaching the game. A couple of tweets on various items. Paul Matrunzik tweets in, when Shady ran 20 or more times in a game this year, the odds were in our favor. I think we had 7 wins when he did. Yeah, the Bills are 7-1 when Shady gets 20 or more carries per game. Now, cause and effect, does he get 20 or more carries because they're leading? They haven't had a lot of games where they've had big leads. But, if you could feed him the ball, get him 20 carries or more, it doesn't guarantee a win, but I think it indicates that things are going pretty well. I would love to have that happen this week.
They need for Shady to get – carries. Now, Shady doesn't come out of the game. They need for Shady to get going in the rushing game, and they need him in the passing game as well. They need to use him all over the field. Shady, I'm sorry. If I'm McDermott, I'm going to go to Shady and say, look, you need to make sure that you're well-rested. Whatever you need to do, massages, get it all done today. Tomorrow, you need to rest. As we travel and we get there, you need to rest, because on Sunday, it's going to be a long day for you. Hopefully, it goes in our favor, and you're having a long, happy day because you're getting a bunch of yards, you're scoring touchdowns, but it's going to be a long day because we have to make sure that we get you the ball in many different ways. So make sure that you're well-rested and prepared to go come Sunday.
One more tweet. Mike Weston tweets, and way to stand up to John Murphy about the Patriots getting calls, Donald Jones. Certainly a reality. Show me. Show me the evidence.
It's hard.
I'm open. I'm an open book.
I'm gonna have our buddy JJ, our crack research staff, if he can. Yeah, right.
Patriot. I don't know how you quantify.
Statistician.
Patriots get all
JJ
the calls.
Torito.
I don't know if they get all the calls.
I don't know if you can actually prove that. But over the years, there have
you
been
can
a
say
lot
it, but you can't
calls.
Prove it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay to say it, but I can't prove it.
I'm gonna see if they can prove it for me
in the next 2.5 hours. Good luck with that.
We'll see.
Mark Kelso standing by to join us, a color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. He has broken down this game, and he's going to start spilling out some of that knowledge with us on the show when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones without his Christmas coat. What happened, Donald? The FCC violation? What?
No, it just got a little hot.
You had the ultimate Christmas sport coat on. That'll look good in the country club, that Christmas club, when you go to the country
that
club
would,
Christmas party.
Yeah. If I was a part of a country club, I'd
wear me too. If I were a country club guy, I would get that too. Mark Kelso is not a country clubber either, and he joins us live in studio to break down this matchup, the Bills and the Patriots. Merry Christmas, Mark. Good to see you. How are you doing?
Yeah, Merry Christmas. I'm well, thank you.
Yeah.
I feel better than I felt during the broadcast
you
on
were
Sunday.
Hurting last Sunday.
Yeah, I was hurting a little bit. So
used up all my lemon tea that may or may not have been lemon.
Yes, correct, but it was a lifesaver, no question.
Yeah, you okay? You ready for this one?
Yeah, I'm ready. And excited about it. And I do think the Bills have an opportunity.
Yeah.
And at any point when we've traveled to New England, I think they certainly have the character in the building. And if they play within themselves and kind of stamp that template, which has given them success here this season with the turnovers and not giving up big plays defensively, and then kind of managing the offensive production, I think they have a chance to knock them off, quite frankly.
In order to get you to your keys to the game, I want to first engage you in our Twitter poll, which kind of deals with that. So let me ask you what we've been asking folks all day. What is the path to victory for the Buffalo Bills coming up this Sunday in New England? What would be the biggest factor for the Buffalo Bills in a win over the Patriots? What would it be? 58% of our respondents say forcing two or more turnovers. 20% say holding Gronkowski to zero touchdowns, keeping Gronk out of the end zone. 19% say Shady getting 150 or more yards total, rushing and receiving. 3% have something else in mind. What I know, there's a variety of factors. I know you're gonna come right out of the gate and say they got to do a lot of things.
But correct.
I know
me well.
I know you well. But if you could, what would be the most important thing they could do to win this game?
If they can consistently disrupt the timing of Tom Brady, they have an opportunity to win. I really do believe that. And because that's what gets him out of his rhythm, that's what will give them an opportunity to create the turnovers that somebody alluded to there. And that was the biggest response, right, the turnovers.
Yeah.
You create a couple turnovers, but the only way you're going to create turnovers is to do a couple things defensively. You've got to keep them off balance. They can't really understand what you're going to do in a particular situation, because if they do, they will carve
it's
you up like
day.
You know, like that Thanksgiving, like that Christmas turkey. I mean, they're just going to they'll know how to defeat if they understand what you're trying to do defensively. They'll have a plan to attack it, and they generally, that plan is generally successful. And if so, you got to keep them off balance. And when Brady is least effective is when you move him off his spot and you can't allow him to move forward. because if you rush threes and nines, and that's one of the things Pittsburgh did on that last drive, is one play they had threes and nines rushing, and guys are outside, and they're outside the defensive ends, or defensive ends are outside the offensive tackles, and then the guys are playing on a three technique that outside shoulder of the offensive guards, but they left the middle open, and then he steps up and hits Gronkowski. I think that was the second play that he hit them in that series, and it did not go well. If you allow him to step up in that situation, it will not go well, and you have opportunities. If you bring some pressure and you have opportunities to bring him down, you have got to close the deal, because if you don't, then he'll hurt you just the same if you don't make that play.
Mark Kelso in studio with us, a color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. Mark, I can't stop thinking about the opening drive of the game against New England 3 weeks ago for the Bills. 66 yards, 70 yards downfield, ended with an interception, but clearly something was going really well for the Bills on that drive, and why not replicate that this Sunday?
Yeah, I would agree with you, and I think there's some things that they can do from an offensive perspective. I think they had some pace in that game. They had some really good rhythm. They went play-action pass on first down. LeSean McCoy had the ball in his hands a lot of the time, and I think he was the intended target on the touchdown pass, quite frankly. But I think there's things that they can do. I think there's ways they can run on this team. This team does not rush the passer particularly well. Mm-hmm. They don't choose to bring pressure very often. Sometimes they'll drop eight in coverage. Rarely they'll bring five, but occasionally they'll bring five pass rushers and play like a 51 backer with a free safety in the middle of the field. And typically what they do, and again, not sure what they would do when they were here, what they did is took Stephon Gilmore and lined him up alongside Zay Jones. So he had that responsibility all afternoon. And then they took Malcolm Butler and put him on other receivers, some of our other receivers. And what they typically do, like against Pittsburgh, I mean, it was not Stephon Gilmore on Antonio Brown. It was Malcolm Butler on Antonio Brown. Yeah, and then Gilmore had one of the other receivers, or had Bryant a lot. So he had those guys, but Antonio Brown, they took him out of the game. They leaned a safety to his side the entire time, and they focused two people. And what typically their defensive strategy is, we're going to take away your best player and see if you can beat us with some other things, and we're not going to allow you to beat us with your best player. And I think the Bills should employ a similar philosophy defensively. And right now, on the offensive side of the football, Gronkowski is that weapon. He's healthy. And Tom Brady seems to find him, and he's physical at the line of scrimmage. He has some escapability in that regard, catches the ball outside his body frame. You see the range he has to be able to catch the ball with that great catch he had the other day in Pittsburgh. So you've got to find ways to prevent Rob Gronkowski from beating you. And I'm not, this doesn't have to turn into a vendetta against what happened the previous time that the Bills played. It was an egregious hit. It was flagrant, but it's over, and they've got to move forward. And thankfully, Tre'Davious White is healthy and continuing to play at the high level he's demonstrated all year. So there's things that they can do, I think, with Rob Gronkowski. You've got to wear him out at the line of scrimmage and then have some help on the back end as well so that he cannot get free and beat you, particularly in critical situations.
Now, how big of a difference would Kelvin Benjamin be to this game, whether he's hurt or 100%. We know he won't be 100% even if he's out there on the field. How big of a difference or impact can he make in this game? He wasn't on the field in the first game.
Yeah, I think he can make a big impact, certainly in the short spaces, because he's got that body positioning, so he becomes a personnel advantage for the Bills, and their corners are not big, and I'm not sure who they would cover Kelvin Benjamin with, but if you slide him into the slot and then are you looking at Patrick Chung? Is he going to line up on him?
That's what I do.
And yeah, that's probably who may line up against him. And if Chung lines up against him, then you're working those short and intermediate spaces and seeing if you can get him free. And then there's some things you can do with man beaters that you have got to find a way to get them in situations when they're uncomfortable. If they're playing man, which they do probably 60 to 75% of the time, you got to find a way to get those guys in stacked positions. You've got to – I've talked about it all year. You've got to get them in cluster situations. Then you got to be willing to run the ball out of those situations as well. When you're in a cluster, they tend to back off, play with the guy who's up on the line of scrimmage. They tend to play man, aggressive man there, and then the other two cornerbacks or dime personnel or whatever personnel it is, typically defensive backs, tend to read the other two receivers, and there's some things you can do with double outs or double ins that will provide some immediate separation so that they can't – there's no way if they're playing in and out and you run two in cuts that one of those guys has got to be open at least for a couple steps if the ball is delivered on time and you have time to throw the football. And then in the running game, I mean, I think there's – I really feel like the Bills have the opportunity to run power offense against this team. I mean, when, with DeMarco and bringing a tight end across, running with that 22 personnel, and just being able to root some of those guys out and create some advantages. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if they'll have their full complement of interior personnel defensively. If they do, more difficult to run inside. But if some of those guys are not available, like Branch and Malcolm Butler, who's the other Butler inside? Marcus Butler. Who is it? Malcolm. No, yeah. Malcolm Brown, not Butler.
Brown, yeah.
Yeah, Malcolm Brown inside. Yeah. I mean, he's formidable, no question. Wise is a really good young player, but a little bit lighter, and I think they can root him out and create some space inside in the running game. So, you talk about Brady all the time. You've got to control the football. You need to do that some, but to think that you're going to say we're not going to give Tom Brady and this offensive unit enough opportunities to score enough points to win a football game is probably unrealistic. While you do have to be able to control the football and make sure you're not going three and out at any great clip, you still need to find ways to defend this really healthy offensive unit that they have in New England.
Mark Kelso in studio with us for a couple of more minutes. Let's take a call from Jimmy in Buffalo. Hi, Jimmy. Go ahead. You're on the air with us. Jimmy, go ahead. Talk to us, please. Can't wait, Jimmy. Sorry about that. Mark, you've mentioned Gronkowski a little bit. He's been on a tear these last two games against Buffalo and against Pittsburgh. Is it all about disrupting timing with him, or what do you do in coverage with him, and who's the best matchup of the various matchups that the Bills might have in mind for Rob Gronkowski?
Well, I mean, I think there's some times that you might be wise schematically from a defensive perspective to sacrifice your pass rush. If he's close to one side, if he's close to that offensive tackle, maybe that defensive end, maybe Jerry, or maybe when they have that 33 package that they run with Lorenzo, maybe he steps out. But honestly, goodness, I would wear him out at the line of scrimmage. I would wear him out every single play. Mm-hmm. And if that resulted in frustration from him, so be it. But I would really wear him out. I would make him expend great energy to escape the line of scrimmage. And I think the guy to do it is I think both guys, Jerry Hughes and Lorenzo Alexander, and particularly Lorenzo, because now Lorenzo will run downfield with them and you don't sacrifice a pass rush. But because if it's Jerry, he's collision him at the line of scrimmage, trying to work him a little bit and impede his progress downfield, but that's going to impede Jerry's progress in the pass rush situation, which I think is okay, particularly if you're causing problems with Gronkowski. But you've got to find ways to do that at the line of scrimmage, prevent him from escaping there, and then you got to have some help on the back end. You don't have to double cover him all the time, but you do have to lean somebody that way. Somebody has to be aware of where he is. Look, that last sequence that they ran at Pittsburgh. Here it is, right here. So on that last drive, they played a man robber coverage. So they're taking one safety and dropping him in the middle. They're worried about the middle of the field. He gets really, really physical, and Brady steps up because there was a little pressure and there was no one in the middle of the field. He steps up and he makes that throw in the middle of the field. The next play they try to bring some pressure. They blitz off of Gronkowski. They're covering him. They blitz and they play a zone pressure package. And nobody covers them in the middle of the field. I think they miscovered it. I think the linebackers didn't do the right things. And then they run man coverage on the next one, and he's all the way across the field, and Brady sidesteps and kind of scrambled a little bit, and he made that great catch on the outside. And that was, again, pure man coverage that with a free safety that he didn't get to the free safety. And then on a two-point conversion, they tried something else. They tried to combo coverage him, and they had a safety inside, and they had it defended beautifully. He made an inside move, and the defender that was covering him at the line of scrimmage jumped to the inside and exposed the outside. So, I mean, he's got a lot of weapons. You've got to find a way to, again, let's take something away that they really like doing. And they like getting him the football, no question about that. So you got to be able to take something away.
What's it like for the Bills, right? Let me run this one by you, Mark. I was thinking about a historical comparison, this game, this setup for the Bills, with two games left, both on the road, within striking distance of a playoff spot. And I had to go all the way back to 1989. You're on the team. You guys had lost two in a row. You go to San Francisco to play the defending Super Bowl champion 49ers, just like the Patriots are defending Super Bowl champs. You lose that game 21-10. Do you remember that day in San Francisco in Candlestick Park? You don't remember?
I'm having trouble. I thought you were going to talk about the no-punt game.
No. Yeah. It was the second to last game of the year. Right. And then you went the following week and hammered the Jets because the Jets laid down. It was 37-0. And I'm thinking this is the closest thing to that since then, almost 28, 29 years ago, when the situation was set up for the Bills. In contention, two games left, both on the road, playing the defending Super Bowl champs. I don't know. What does it mean for this week? Nothing. But I just think it's interesting. And also, the Bills at that time, you – and your teammates, Kelly, kind of viewed as a team on the rise. Maybe the same could be said about this Bills team.
Yeah, and we were a team on the rise because we had an exceptional season in 88, but that 88-9 certainly was disappointing, and then you went on the run after that. But, you know, and I do recall the game, not one that comes to mind all the time when you're thinking about those things, but I do remember, I want to say the game against the Jets was a New Year's or a Christmas Eve game.
It was a Saturday afternoon. That's why it was different. Yeah, and it was very windy.
Right, and yeah, I do remember that game and being able to go to with a divisional opponent and come out of there with a victory and know that you had an opportunity to get to the playoffs, although not in a position you particularly wanted to be.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah, this is it's exactly where they wanted to be. They've accomplished a lot this year. There's no question about it. I think they've developed some continuity just as a group. They've done some things this year that have allowed them to come together and to really kind of cauterize the team concept that I think Coach McDermott and Leslie Frazier and Brandon Bean, I mean, it's just the whole organization has been trying to develop since they stepped foot in the building here in last offseason, and I think they've made some definitive steps in that direction to make that happen. And you know, the best thing that happened was the losing streak in the middle of the year after a good start. Because it just taught them all that it's not that darn easy, and we've got to play our very, very best football every single down, every single snap. And that's the message that they're trying to preach to each other, and I think it's an important message, and it's a true message. If you don't play every snap, you're not going to find a way to get yourself to victory in this league or get to the postseason. So I think there's been a lot of growth. I think they're kind of on the precipice here to see if they can crack the code. And what a better place to do it than against a nemesis that you've just had a real difficult overcoming in the last decade and a half.
This is one of your favorite places to broadcast from. You probably won't admit it, but I know you love interacting with those Foxborough fans who are arm's length away from you, right in front. You should see almost.
Well,
I have actually hidden behind the desk in Foxborough because he starts, you know, taunting the Patriots.
No, we don't taunt them.
Yes, you do.
We do have
how much you pay for those seats? That's all your favorite.
We do have some interaction, but we do not taunt. We do not taunt.
You always tease them about how much does that seat cost.
We are very respectful. We're very respectful to those fans. And they're passionate and they're boisterous, and I'm sure it'll be exactly like that on Sunday. But it's great. It's a great atmosphere.
There
aren't too many atmospheres better than that in the NFL. I would say Buffalo's better atmosphere, but it's a fantastic atmosphere. They'll have great fan support, and they want to close out the season well also because they understand how important it is to go into the playoffs
with
home field and playing good football. Even if you don't have home field, if you really feel like you have rhythm and you're clicking on all cylinders, that's great. When you feel like there's some things missing, and always through the course of the year you've got these peaks and valleys where, you know, things are going really well. This is exactly the way we wanted to do this from a schematic standpoint defensively and offensively, and now it's not clicking. It's just not clicking. We're not getting this done. Our running game's not going well, and I'm kind of speaking about the Bills here. And then all of a sudden you figure out and you say, yeah, now we got it going again. We're right where we want to be. And I think the Bills are where they want to be. They've kind of found their running game again. Mm-hmm. LeSean McCoy has certainly found his footing, and not that he lost any of it, but there were a couple games in there. We only had 11 or 12 touches, and things did not go particularly well on the offensive side of the football. And then defensively, they've gotten back to giving up to preventing those big plays and creating turnovers and giving their offense some opportunities on the other side with some advantageous field position. So, I mean, I think they're right where they want to be against an opponent that if they can go out there and win, It makes a huge statement for what they've accomplished this year.
All right, Mark, thanks very much. We'll see you Sunday. Thank you.
Look forward to it.
Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. We've got the call of the game here on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Sal Capaccio will be on the sidelines. We start at 1 o'clock with the kickoff. Network pregame coverage at 11 a.m. Donald and I back with more in just a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive as we talk about the Bills and the Patriots. Our Twitter poll today deals with this game. And what do you think is the most important factor for the Buffalo Bills to come out of New England with a victory? Long shot? You better believe it's a long shot. But what would have the biggest impact in a Bills win over the Patriots? On Twitter, we've been asking that question. 57% of you say forcing two or more turnovers. 20% say holding Gronkowski to no touchdowns, keeping him out of the end zone. 20% say LeSean McCoy with 150 or more total yards. 3% have something else in mind. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Turnovers are great. Takeaways are great. They can do that. I think they can do that, though.
I think they can do it, but I think you got to hit him first before.
That'll play into getting turnovers.
Yeah, you know, he's so good. He's so great at what he's able to do and diagnosing your defense and what you're trying to do to him. It's rare that you truly confuse him. Now, it can happen every now and then, and he might make a mistake and throw an interception. But I think if you want to get a couple of interceptions or something like that on him, you need to make sure that you're hitting him and frustrating him and confusing him at the same time.
All right, we're going to talk more about this game with our next guest coming up after the top of the hour, Greg Cosell. From ESPN's NFL Matchup, longtime producer at NFL Films. He has the breakdown on the Bills and the Patriots coming up, plus a lot of the other action in the NFL. He'll join us when we return after the top of the hour. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills have just wrapped up their Friday afternoon practice. Kelvin Benjamin doing okay, according to head coach Sean McDermott, trying to work through his knee injuries. He was limited today. He will be questionable for Sunday. The same for cornerback E.J. Gaines, limited today and questionable for Sunday. Also limited in practice today and questionable for the game. Defensive tackle Kyle Williams with a groin. Tight end Nick O'Leary with his back. Offensive lineman John Miller with his ankle. No practice today for Andre Holmes, and he has been ruled out of the game on Sunday, the Bills wide receiver. Bills Patriots, 1 o'clock kickoff at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Our network pregame on the radio starts at 11 a.m. Kickoff at 1 with myself and Mark Kelso on the call of the game, the Bills in New England. New York Giants announced yesterday they interviewed another potential general manager candidate, Louis Riddick, currently with ESPN. He has 13 years experience in league front offices, working for Washington and Philadelphia. Pro scout for the Giants for 4 years before he was promoted to director of pro personnel. Louis Riddick interviewing yesterday for the Giants general manager's job. Seattle Seahawks have been fined $100,000 for violating the concussion protocol with quarterback Russell Wilson on their game last month against Arizona. They are the first team to receive a monetary fine under the policy. And Wilson said he was just told about it. He says he doesn't really care what the league does about the fine. The NFL has instructed its officials to no longer use paper as a tool during the process of measuring a first down after referee Gene Steratore stirred controversy using an index card during the Cowboys' win over the Oakland Raiders last Sunday night. Dick Enberg, the Hall of Fame broadcaster, passed away last night at the age of 82. Enberg missed his flight to Boston on Thursday and was found dead in his home in suburban San Diego with his bags packed for a trip to see his third grandchild for the first time. Dick Enberg, honored and revered broadcaster, dead at the age of 82. And the Buffalo Sabres in action tonight. They host the Philadelphia Flyers at KeyBank Center. Face-off 7 o'clock in downtown Buffalo. That's the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio. And joining us on the line, the analyst and co-host and producer of ESPN's NFL Matchup, senior producer at NFL Films. Happy to have Greg Cosell on the line with us. Greg, it's John Murphy and Donald here in Buffalo. Happy holidays to you. Thanks for being on with us today.
Happy holidays to you guys. Murph, you ready to come on the Matchup show? Because who knows? We might be losing Louis Riddick, you know?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's a big part of your show. Yeah.
He'd
be a good general manager, right? Tell me about his credentials and how you think he would fare as a general manager.
Oh, I think he'd be phenomenal because, I mean, I've gotten a chance to get to know him now that he's on the show with me, and really, really sharp guy, really sharp guy. And again, you know, I'm not in that position to do that kind of interviewing or what is specifically needed to be a great GM, but he's a really smart football guy.
Hey, well, Greg, let's get into a little bit of the Bills-Patriots game, but we got to talk about the Steelers-Patriots and then what the Bills were able to do to the Patriots in the first game. Did you see anything in those first the two games that I just talked about that would lead you to believe that the Bills have a shot in this game?
Well, I think, Donald, it probably comes down to the Bills offensively. I don't think they played poorly against the Patriots offense. That game was not a blowout in terms of score. And, you know, it was one of those progressive games. Obviously, the Bills defense, the two things that they struggled with a run game, they gave up close to 200 yards. And then, of course, the Gronk factor. He had 9 for 147. But you're not going to win many games scoring. What did they score? 3 points, I think.
Yep, yep.
So to me, it really comes down to their offense. The Patriots, it's funny you mentioned the Pittsburgh game because the Patriots used Jordan Richards as a seventh defensive back in both games in different ways. Against Pittsburgh, they used Richards as a man-to-man defender on Le'Veon Bell because the Patriots are a higher percentage man-to-man defense. Against the Bills, when they played Week 13, they used Richards in their seven defensive backs package. They used him as a spy on Tyrod Taylor, which if you're going to spy Taylor, that makes sense because at least he's close to being, you know, an equal athlete. But Taylor has beaten spies this year a number of times. But still, that's the way Richards was used the last 2 weeks.
Hey, Greg, that first Bills-Patriots matchup 3 weeks ago now, the Bills moved the ball well on their first possession. Obviously, the interception down at the goal line. Did New England switch things up? Did they try to get better matchups somehow after that first series? What did you see?
You know, I don't remember specifically if they did anything different. I mean, the Bills did have a really good drive. You know, I thought on the first possession, the Bills got to the perimeter pretty well. See, when the Patriots play their sort of conventional nickel, when they have two linebackers, Roberts and Harris, on the field, they are not very fast. They're not speed range, inside out pursuit players. And I remember on that first drive, the Bills really used the outside run game, what I call the pin pull concept. They got on the perimeter and they were able to move the ball. Now, that didn't happen the rest of the game, which is not surprising given that Belichick does make adjustments, but you know, that was one thing that did work. I think you have to try to take advantage of Harris and Roberts because they're just not particularly athletic on the inside.
Hey, Greg, what about the Dolphins game? Now, it's obvious they didn't have Rob Gronkowski in that game, and he is huge to that offense. It's apparent. But what did the Dolphins do to the Patriots that the Bills might be able to do?
Well, the Dolphins played a ton of man coverage, press man across the board. They played a lot of robber. They put a defensive back, one robber, as we say. So they took a safety and they put him in the middle of the field to take away a lot of the in-breaking routes. And they were able to get pressure with their down four. So, you know, if you're able to do all those things, play press man, get pressure with four, that usually works almost against anybody, but it was effective in that game against Brady. Now, for the most part, Donald, the Bills, they do play man, but I wouldn't say they're a predominant man coverage team. Mm-hmm. And now the pressure with four becomes a little bit of an issue. If Kyle Williams can't go, that's a little bit of an issue. So we'll see. I mean, the Bills, you know, when all's said and done, you have to do one of two things in whatever ways you can. You've got to either speed Brady up, or you've got to disrupt the pass game by disrupting the receivers. So you have to do one of those two things consistently.
And Greg, how do those two objectives apply to trying to deal with Rob Gronkowski? He's had two monster games in his last two games, including one against Buffalo. The teams who have managed to handle Gronkowski, what sort of matchup do they show? And what do they do with Gronkowski to handle him better than some others?
Well, I think ultimately what you have to try to do with him, and it's difficult because his size is just really impressive. I think what you have to do is you have to try to slow down his release. You have got to try to at least be somewhat physical, reroute him somehow. And then, of course, you get into the pressure part with that on Brady, but you have to try to reroute him somewhat. You can't give him free releases into his routes because that does not disrupt the timing of the pass game. And you have to take your shot. I mean, you know, they on the play where, you know, Gronk got tossed out of the game and suspended against Buffalo, that was Tre'Davious White who was on him and got really physical with him. And we can sit here and say that was a hold that should have been called. Maybe it should have been, but it wasn't. The point is you have to try to play that way. You can't just let him release freely off the line of scrimmage.
Hey, Greg, what about Brandon Cooks? They brought him in to be the true deep threat for them. Do you feel like they've really gotten him going yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Donald, they have. I mean, he's probably averaging about 17 yards a catch. He's become clearly a vertical threat for that team. And I think whether it's because of him, and it may well be, this pass offense has become much more intermediate and vertical in design. Brady is up among the league leaders in passes that travel 20-plus yards in the air from the line of scrimmage. We never would have said that about Brady last year, two, three, 4 years ago. You'd have to go back to Randy Moss for that to be a factor. So, yes, I think they've used Cooks in a vertical way, and they've asked Brady to take deeper drops and throw the ball down the field.
With Greg Cosell, the analyst, producer of NFL Matchup on ESPN this weekend, what does a path to a Buffalo upset win in Foxborough look like, Greg? What would you see?
Ooh. Well, again, I come back to the offense. They're going to have to find some way to create pass plays in this game, because even if LeSean's able to run for a lot of yards, it's just very hard to score a lot that way. I mean, unless he's going to run for 350-yard touchdowns, which is not likely.
Right.
So, you know, I think you have to find some way to create explosive pass plays. And whether you do that on first down at a base personnel against the base personnel defense of the Patriots, where they'll probably have the slower linebackers, Roberts and Harris, on the field, I think that's what you have to try to do, Murph. It's going to be very hard to win this game just on the defensive side of the ball. Now, of course, special teams is a part of every game. You know, I'll be the first to admit I'm not an expert in that area by any means, so let's put that aside for a minute. But offensively, they're going to have to find a way to create some explosive chunk plays in this game.
That's been a problem for him all season long, as you know, 32nd in
no
pass
question.
Offense. Yeah. Hey, Greg, let me take you to a couple of other games. Kansas City, same time the Bills are playing, the Chiefs will be home against the Miami Dolphins. Have the Chiefs righted the ship, do you think? And is Alex Smith, is everything settled in Kansas City? And do you think they'll just progress on and make a little run in the playoffs here? What do you see for them in the immediate future?
Well, Murph, I don't think there was anything wrong with Alex Smith. I mean, everybody, of course, was talking about Alex Smith as if he was the issue. I don't think Alex Smith was the issue. Keep in mind that for, I think, 7 straight games, Kareem Hunt did not rush for 100 yards. And then all of a sudden, the last 2 games, he's been 49 for 271. So I think that the last game they played against San Diego was very representative of what the Chiefs' offense is. It's Smith playing mistake-free, safe, cautious football, hitting a big play or two based on play design or a favorable matchup, which they can get often with Kelce or Hill, and then Hunt running with sustaining consistency. If those things happen, their offense looks good.
Greg, what about Baltimore? They're playing Indy this week. Does Indy have a shot in that game? Has Baltimore righted the ship?
I think Baltimore,
said?
What we've seen, Donald, the last couple of weeks offensively has been a little more consistent run game. And I think they've been pushing the ball down the field a little more in the pass game. That's something they were not doing at all for much of this season. And I think you can see clearly that they're trying to get the ball at the intermediate levels more. They're trying to take a few more shots down the field. And we know that Joe Flacco is more than capable of making those throws. So I think they've tried to be a little more aggressive with the pass game. And if they can have success doing that, then their offense will clearly be better.
Greg Cosell is on the line with us from ESPN's NFL Matchup. Greg, a lot of Bills fans are keeping an eye on the Tennessee Titans, who have not been impressive of late, and they're coming off a loss at San Francisco. Now they're home against the Rams. Do the Titans have anywhere near the kind of firepower they might need to put up a battle with the Rams this Sunday?
Well, you know, that's a really fascinating question, and one I think a lot about with Tennessee, because Mike Mularkey, and you guys know him, he has a defined approach as to how he wants to play. He believes in physical football. He believes in base personnel, tight formations. Let's run and make it a war of attrition, a game of attrition. I'm not sure the personnel in Tennessee is conducive to that philosophy, and they've really had a hard time running the ball this year. Starting with a two-minute warning this past week and through the second half, they went to 11 personnel, three wide, spread formations, no huddle, and I think Marcus Mariota is far more comfortable in that kind of offense, and they had some success this past week doing it, even though they ended up losing the game to the 49ers. So I'm real anxious to see if that's their approach. Now, if that's your approach, you're going to have to block Aaron Donald, and you're going to have to block inside, and that's the weakness of their offensive line. So we'll see. I mean, it might be pick your poison here, but I think they're a more comfortable offense, and the players better fit a little more of a spread approach.
I haven't seen enough of the Rams, I confess, this season, Greg, and you probably have seen a lot more than most of us. What is it about the Rams schematically that has made them so tough to defend and led them to their 10 wins so far?
Well, you start with the fact that no team in the NFL lines up with three wide receivers more than the Rams. I just mentioned 11 personnel. That's one back, one tight end, three wide receivers. They play out of that personnel package on almost 80% of their snaps. So when you play against them, you're going to be playing in your nickel, more than likely, or dime, depending on what your preferred sub-package, as they call it, might be. But they're really – Sean McVay is really, really good with route concepts. Out of two, three-man route concepts, he's really good with what we call stacks and bunch concepts. And what this all does, Murph, is it defines the reads and the throws within structure and timing for your quarterback. So Jared Goff has played extremely well this year. He almost at times looks like a programmed quarterback, and I don't mean that in a negative way. He hits the back foot, and the ball comes out. And Sean McVay is just really, really good at play design.
Greg, I want to talk to you a little bit about, I guess, it might be the biggest matchup this week, the Falcons and Saints. It was a big-time matchup a couple of weeks ago. It was an exciting finish. What do you see in that game?
Well, the one thing that's happened over the last 2 weeks, which started with that game, is the Falcons have gotten Devonta Freeman rolling a little bit. He's gained over something like 225 yards or so in the last two games. They run the outside zone play, Donald, so well. They get the ball on the edge with their run game. I think the problem they've had this year, which Kyle Shanahan was great at a year ago, Steve Sarkisian hasn't quite gotten to that point, but there hasn't been the mesh or the fusion or the connection between their run game and their pass game. And I think that's one reason why Matt Ryan's numbers this year are nowhere near what they were a year ago, because that fusion between run and pass where it looks so much alike, that just hasn't been there as much this year, and it's made their offense arrhythmic. Let's use that word, arrhythmic at times this year. It doesn't have the same look and flow as it did a year ago.
Greg, 4 o'clock Sunday out west. It's the born-again 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo against the team that everybody loves defensively anyway, Jacksonville. How good are the Jacksonville Jaguars? And similar to the Rams question I asked you a minute ago, what are they doing, if anything, schematically to make their defense so solid this year?
Well, their defense is really, really good. I mean, it starts with people for them. They've got really good people because they've got everything you need at each level of the defense. They can rush the quarterback. Their linebackers in their nickel are Smith and Miles Jack, and they're very fast and athletic. And they've got two corners that, if needed, can line up and play man-to-man defense, which obviously they do play man. So they're really good personnel-wise at each and every level, and that's where it starts because they're a base 4-3 team. Then they go to their nickel. They're not a high percentage blitz team. They pretty much line up and play, but they have really good personnel, Murph.
Is this the biggest test for Garoppolo in his young career? Is it? Yeah.
Without question.
Hey, Greg, I want to talk a little bit about the Steelers. And with the absence of Antonio Brown, he's expected to be back for the playoffs. But can that team play and go far in the playoffs if he's not able to get back for the playoffs?
You know, I think they have enough, Donald. Again, there's clearly a chemistry with Big Ben and Antonio that he's not going to have with anyone else. But I really like Juju Smith-Schuster. I really liked him coming out of USC. I'll give you an example. I mean, I thought watching him, his college tape, and then thinking about someone like Michael Thomas now with the Saints, who's just had two 90-catch seasons in a row, I liked Smith-Schuster more coming out than I liked Michael Thomas coming out. So I really like Smith-Schuster, and I think over these next two games and perhaps longer, he can become a big factor in this passing game. Obviously, Antonio Brown, hey, I'm sure some will say he's the best receiver in football. Arguably, he is. So you don't replace that guy, but I don't know if they're lacking.
Last thing, Greg, I want to circle around back to the Buffalo Bills and kind of what's left for Buffalo with the game at Foxborough and then the game at Miami. You know, you look at some of the metrics and you know, the Bills don't add up to a real solid playoff team. I think their point differential is minus 42 going into this game this week. So how shocking would it be? How surprising would you be? How surprised would you be if the Bills managed to do what they need to do and get a playoff spot here in the AFC?
Well, they're going to have to win. They need help, right? I mean,
yeah,
just winning
yeah.
two games doesn't put
do
them
it.
In, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it would be wonderful. I mean, you know, look, I know Sean. I really like Sean as a coach. I've always liked Sean as a coach. So there's a personal thing in it for me, to be honest with you. I'd really hope that it works out. You know, again, because of the numbers and the metrics, it's not likely to happen. I would just like to see this game this week be a really competitive game. Let's start there, because you got to play this week first. You know, it's not likely they're going to go into Foxborough and win 30-10. So let's make this game competitive
right.
and have a chance to win in the fourth quarter. And then we'll reconvene next week.
Yeah, we'll hash it out next week. Greg, thank you for this. Have a great holiday weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday. Thanks.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you. Great holiday.
Okay. Greg Cosell, the analyst, producer of NFL Matchup on ESPN. You can catch that the next couple of days on ESPN. Senior producer at NFL Films for 38 years, and he joined us as he does every Friday. We'll see him again next Friday. All right, Donald and I back with more. We'll talk a little bit more about Tyrod Taylor with a former college teammate of Tyrod's when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Happy holidays, Bills fans.
Happy holidays, Bills fans. This is Zay Jones. I especially like to thank our season ticket members for their support throughout the year. That's why Buffalo has the best fans in the NFL.
This is Jordan Poyer from the entire Buffalo Bills organization. We'd like to wish you and your families a safe, healthy, and happy holiday season. Thanks for all your support throughout the year. From the land.
Some of the fellows in the locker room. I'm guessing they probably recorded those when it was like 88 degrees in August.
Yeah, right. Hey, like, you want me to do Christmas greetings right now?
What?
It's August.
That's how it usually rolls, right?
Yeah. They got to get it. When they do all of this, they do it in the summertime.
Oh, yeah.
They get all of the – when you see the guys on Monday Night Football and they're like, yeah, this is so-and-so from so-and-so high school or something like that.
Yeah.
All of that stuff gets done in the summertime.
Yeah. It's like a car wash out in the field house, right? You just go station to station.
Station to station. And just,
here's your Christmas greeting. Here's your CBS thing. Here's your Monday Night Football thing, right?
Now make a crazy face.
Right. Right. And it all comes out in the wash. Hey, thanks again to Greg Cosell for joining us. We've had a whirlwind last hour, and we're going to continue it on now, talking about the Bills and the Patriots and talking about the Bills in general. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline to talk about this matchup and talk about his former college teammate is a man who played 9 seasons in the National Football League at wide receiver, second-round draft pick of the Denver Broncos in 2008 out of Virginia Tech, former teammate of Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor. Happy to have Eddie Royal on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us. Eddie, John Murphy and Donald Jones here in Buffalo. Thank you very much for joining us here today. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Eddie, I know you're from Virginia, just like Tyrod Taylor is. How much did you pay attention to Tyrod Taylor coming out of high school? I mean, I feel like everybody in that area knew about Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, you know, he was a 5-star recruit coming out, and we all wanted to make sure that we got him. And just knowing him from the 757 area, we had a lot of those guys from going to Virginia Tech, so it was big that we got him. And once he got in to Virginia Tech, I mean, he was everything that he was advertised to be. One of the best athletes on the team right away as soon as he got there. And then a guy who didn't panic under pressure. He threw him in a game against LSU as a freshman, and he stood in there and made some plays for us. So he's just one of those guys that has a knack for making big plays.
What did you think of him coming to the Hokies back then? You were, what, a couple of years ahead of him at Virginia Tech? What kind of impression did he make when he first got there?
Yeah, he was a very humble guy from the beginning. Just coming in, he had a lot of hype. He could have walked in with that attitude like, I'm the man, but he didn't. He put his head down and he worked hard and he tried to learn from the guys that were ahead of him. And that's kind of what you want to see as an older guy from a younger guy with a lot of hype coming in. And you never know that he was a five-star recruit. He came in and busted his butt just like everybody else and didn't expect any special treatment. And that's why we all appreciated him.
What is it about guys from Virginia going to Virginia Tech, man? I mean, is that like an unwritten rule? You're from, especially that Newport News area, you go to Virginia Tech?
You know, it kind of is, though, you know. it all started with Michael Vick. You know, everybody wanted to be like Mike when he was out there making plays. That's the reason I started paying attention to Virginia Tech was because Michael Vick, he was out there making so many plays, got him to a national championship against Florida State and almost pulled it off. So everybody wanted to be like Mike back then. And so Virginia Tech was kind of put on the map after that. And then they got some big-time recruits. You had Kevin Jones and Lee Suggs in there making plays. And so it was just something about staying at home and trying to do something for our state. You want to get the best guys together and try to make something happen.
You you played for Frank Beamer there, right, with the Hokies at Virginia Tech?
Yeah.
I did, Coach Beamer. And, I mean, he preached special teams. So I was grateful to be able to get out there and return some kicks for him and score on a couple punt returns. So Coach Beamer is one of the all-time greats, and he's in the Hall of Fame out there for a reason.
Second-round pick, you come into the league with the Denver Broncos, Eddie, and you really had an outstanding rookie season, right? 91 catches in your first season in the league with the Denver Broncos. What a way to get out of the gate and get your NFL career going.
Yeah, you know what? I came into a great situation. I had some veteran guys around me. One of the best head coaches ever coaching in the NFL, Mike Shanahan. And they put me in position to have success. You know, it wasn't they didn't put too much on my shoulders. It was just go out there and make plays. It wasn't a simple offense, but I was able to learn it fast. So I wasn't out there overthinking things. It was just go out there, use your athletic ability, and go make some plays.
When you have that great rookie season, you came in as a second-round pick, so you have pressure on you anyway because you're a high draft pick. But then you have this great rookie season, and going into your second year, did you feel like you had a lot of pressure on you?
No, the second year was kind of I didn't feel the pressure. It was more excitement about getting out there and wanting to make even more plays and showing that I'm even better than what I did the previous year. And it's just a lot of excitement and things kind of – you learn in the NFL that things change in an instant. And so things changed that really quickly. We had a coaching change. We had a quarterback change, coordinator change. And you know, playing in a league, when the offense changes, a lot of things change. But then you – change the offense, but also the quarterback. So it was a lot of turnover that next year, and so it was a completely different team. And that's just kind of – I learned early on that the NFL is frequently changing, and you just got to be able to adapt.
Hey, you were on Good Morning Football, I think it was yesterday. I saw you on Good Morning Football, and you were talking about Tyrod, and you basically said he has what it takes to go out to New England and beat the Patriots. And you've talked about him in college, but what have you seen out of him here in the NFL?
You know, I've seen him mature, and everybody's seen that he's improved as a passer. I mean, we've all known what he's able to do with his feet and be able to make plays, but just to be able to stand in a pocket a tick longer and make those plays, make those throws downfield, use those tight ends, and he's got one of the best backs in the league. So using him out the backfield, it's just good to see his growth. And seeing that C on his chest, I mean, that means everything. It means that the guys in the locker room respect you, that they look up to you, and that they're expecting you to lead the team. And I think he's done a great job of that. And moving forward, I mean, it's so hard to prepare for him because it's the unexpected play, you know. It's the play where you have the perfect coverage and you get a good pass rush, but he's still able to break out and get 20 yards on a scramble. That's why I think he's so dangerous moving forward. With the Buffalo Bills.
Eddie, do you think Tyrod Taylor is unappreciated in the NFL and maybe even here in Buffalo?
I do. You know, it's just a personal opinion. It was painful for me to see him go through what he did earlier this season, getting benched, I guess you call it what it is.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that he deserved that at all. You know, he had the team at 5-4, something like that. I don't want to throw off the wrong stats.
No, that's it. 5-4. Had a winning,
yeah, they still had a winning record. He was taking care of the ball. He was doing everything that you want a quarterback to do. And everybody has up and down games. I mean, that's the NFL. You're playing against great talent. But I thought he gave them the best chance to win. And it just kind of, I don't know. I don't know if it sends the wrong message to the locker room or not when you bench the guy that's the captain of the football team, your starting quarterback. It just says something. It would have said something to me as a receiver, because that's the guy that I've been working with all offseason, have been preparing to go into these fights and these battles, and that's my guy. I'm going to stick with him till the end. I just didn't like to see that, you know, and then to have to go back to him after things didn't work out. Now it kind of leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Right.
But hopefully they can put it all behind them. I mean, I know it's hard to do, but it's the business and it's your job, and Tyrod's the type of guy to put it all behind him and go out there and play for his guys.
You talked about it sending a message throughout the locker room. You've played for Denver, San Diego, and Chicago, a couple of different teams. So you've probably seen a key guy on the team around the locker room get benched at some point in your career. Did that send a bad message throughout the locker room that you were in?
You know what? In each locker room, guys kind of have an overall sense of how they feel guys are playing. And it's the overall sense. Everybody kind of agreed collectively, even without talking about it, you just know. If they thought that guy needed to be benched, then it wouldn't be an issue. It'd be like, okay, he wasn't getting it done. We need to move on to the next guy. But in this case, I don't think that was the case. I think guys still felt like he was the guy to get us to the playoffs and do something special. So that's where I think the split in the locker room could have been. Well, not necessarily a split, but it could have rubbed some people the wrong way. Just saying that, hey, he's still the best guy that we got. He's still our best option. So what are we doing here? It kind of makes you question the direction of the team.
And now
they got him. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Finish up. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, I'm saying now they got him back in there starting that quarterback. And so hopefully those guys will just play for each other. You know, that's when your team is the most dangerous, is when you're playing for one another. And I think that those guys will fight for Tyrod, and he'll do the same thing for them.
Eddie, not only did you talk about this week on NFL Network about your support and your affection for Tyrod Taylor, you also think Taylor can engineer a pretty big upset this Sunday in New England, right? What do you see there?
I mean, just because kind of what I said with Tyrod, it's just it's hard to game plan for him, because you got to game plan for him as a normal drop back quarterback with route combinations and everything. Then you got a game plan for the zone read. Then you got to try to contain him in the pocket. He presented so many obstacles for the defense. It's just so much to think about when he's back there that it's just hard to game plan for. And I think that he'll be able to make a lot of those plays on third down to keep that Patriots offense off the field. And I think that's what you have to do to beat them. Have Tom Brady sitting on a bench rather than out there sustaining long drives and scoring points. So I think what Ty's able to do, he's able to just get those key third downs and run the ball and get completions and just move the game in the Bills' favor. And so that's kind of what Tyrod Taylor brings to the table.
Hey, Eddie, you're talking about the criticism of Tyrod Taylor. Another person who's received some criticism this year has been the offensive coordinator, Rick Dennison. You played under Rick Dennison out in Denver. What'd you think of him, you know, calling plays out there and as a coach in period?
I thought he did a great job for us. When I was there, we had a top five offense and he was calling the plays. And you just got to kind of understand it. It's a tough job for him. It stands that Ty is one type of quarterback and the other guy, what's his name, Pierman, he's another type of quarterback. So it's two different game plans you got to put together. And now that it's just Tyrod, I think that you can get back to seeing that Bills team to be able to get those key third downs and be able to move the ball. It's just a tough job for a head coach when you don't know which quarterback you're going to have. Now that Ty's in there and he's going to be the quarterback moving forward, I think this offense will be able to get rolling And I think you really got to get Shady the ball. I mean, I think that's what every Bills fan wants to see is sure. one of your best players get the ball at least 20 times a game. So with that going and Ty making plays, I think the Bills can be a dangerous team.
Hey, Eddie, we all want to see Shady get the ball. If they can get him going, it goes a long way towards a win. But the question now is for you. What are you free agent this year. You didn't play this year. I think I saw that you would still like to play. What have you done this year? I'm sure you've been training. What else have you done?
Yeah, I've been training and rehabbing and just doing everything to make sure that I'm ready to go if and when that time comes. But also, man, you know, when you get away from the game a little bit, you spend some time with your family and be able to have Thanksgiving, be able to have Christmas. I'm having Christmas with my family, so I'm enjoying that aspect of it too. My body's getting healthy, so I feel the best I have ever felt this time of year. So I've just been getting ready to go to see what happens.
Well, we wish the best for you, Eddie. Have a great Christmas holiday with your family, and thank you very much for being on with us today to talk about your old teammate, Tyrod Taylor. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Eddie Royal, 9 years in the NFL, played nine seasons in the league with Denver, San Diego, and Chicago. Second-round pick out of Virginia Tech, where he was a teammate of Tyrod Taylor. Eddie joined us on the Subway Fresh Tech Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio. Reed's Gens brings you the Diamond in the Rough. This week, it's tight end Charles Clay. He was a sixth-round draft pick for the Dolphins in 2011. Charles Clay joined the Bills on the free agent market before the 2015 season. In his first year in Buffalo, Clay had 51 catches, 528 yards, and 3 touchdowns. This season, Charles Clay played a pivotal role in the Week 4 win over undefeated Atlanta with 112 reception yards. During Sunday's win over the Dolphins, his former team, he caught 5 of 9 targets for 68 yards, giving him his highest yardage in a game since October. Clay is the first Bills tight end with back-to-back seasons with 50 or more catches and 500 or more receiving yards. Charles Clay, this week's Diamond in the Rough, presented by Reed's Gens, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills. Congratulations to Charles Clay, this week's Diamond in the Rough. John Murphy, Donald Jones here from our One Buffalo studio. Lorenzo Alexander going to be by at 2 o'clock for this week's edition of the Lowdown. Hey, Donald, I should mention, Dick Enberg passed away last night at the age of 82. Hall of Fame broadcaster, one of the most beloved sports broadcasters in American history, NBC, CBS, ESPN. He covered 28 Wimbledons, 10 Super Bowls, 8 NCAA men's basketball championship games, including the famous 1979 Magic Larry Bird Showdown. He was honored by the National Baseball Hall of Fame with the Ford Frick Award, the Pro Football Hall of Fame's Roselle Award, the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame's Kurt Gowdy Award, 13 Sports Emmys, Lifetime Achievement Emmy. Worked as late as last year when he was still doing San Diego Padres baseball games. He said baseball was his first love, apparently. And as far as the Bills, Sal Capaccio, our buddy Sal, put together some numbers, did some research. From 1980 through 1993, the Bills played 19 playoff games, including Super Bowls. Dick Enberg called 10 of them. I mean, he was the voice of the Bills on TV in the playoffs and several playoff games as well as that. He was just around. He was ubiquitous. And he got his start, really, with the old UCLA basketball teams, Lou Alcindor's basketball teams, John Wooden's great string in the 60s and 70s. And that's not where he started, but that really is where he rose to prominence. A consummate broadcaster. I had a chance to say hi to him in the press box in Los Angeles. We were out there with the Rams at the Coliseum a year ago, 14 months ago, whatever it was. And first of all, I turned the corner. Remember that press box? Well, you were there, right? You make that trip?
Which trip?
Rams last year?
Yeah.
Remember how that press box was all cramped and disjointed? Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like, we're not in the NFL. I turned the corner in the press box here an hour or so before kickoff, and Dick Enberg's standing there.
Hmm. Okay.
It was like, it was like seeing Babe Ruth. I was like, oh, my goodness, that's Dick Enberg. So I worked up enough courage to go up and just introduce myself, shook his hand, told him how much, you know, I mean, it's cliche, but I grew up watching you and how much I admired his work. And he could not have been nicer, just a wonderful man. And for many of us of a certain age, he was the premier sportscaster of his time. You know, he's right there. Do you have many recollections of him watching him? Nothing?
No.
I mean,
to be honest, when I was playing up until I retired, I didn't even watching games. I didn't pay attention to who was calling the game. You know, it was, I was just paying attention to the game. It wasn't like, oh, that's so and so calling the game. I just never really paid attention like that.
I mean, he's up there with Al Michaels, certainly, who still works, and you know, Pat Summerall, John Madden, mm-hmm. and those guys in NFL. So he will be missed. Dick Enberg, who passed away at the age of 82, overnight at his home outside San Diego. Hey, I want to mention this too. I think we got a couple of minutes here. We're towards the end of the season. You can identify with us. Players looking at performance bonuses, trying to hit their bonuses.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see this about Rob Gronkowski?
What is his bonus?
It's pretty amazing. Rob Gronkowski, base salary, $4.25 million this year. He has $6.5 million in bonuses at stake, or had them going into the season. He's already earned $4.5 million with 1,000 yards receiving. He can earn another $2 million in bonuses the next couple of weeks with either 90% playing time, 80 catches, 1,200 receiving yards, or all-pro recognition, which he's already been four times. He is at 79% playing time, so he might not hit that. He has 64 catches with two games left to play. He needs 16. But there's still $2 million on the table for Ron Gronkowski. He's already made $4.5 million in bonuses this year. Ooh. Certainly, players have that
straight
in the back
cash,
of their mind.
Homie, like Randy Moss says, show me the money, baby.
Right? In the back of your mind as a player, you know those numbers, right? You know where you're at.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the rest of the guys know. I remember Stevie had a bonus, and I remember him talking to Fitz. Hey, Fitz, I need a couple of catches this game so that I can hit this bonus. And on the flip side, you know, there are certain players that have talked about guys – not getting their bonuses for whatever reason. It's like, all I need is a couple of catches and you don't get it for whatever reason. But it's good to see guys be able to hit their incentives and get their money. I never had those types of bonuses. What I had was the player performance checks. Because I was undrafted, the guys who go undrafted, they get those player performance checks. And really, you get a certain amount of money. I don't know what it is today, but you get a certain amount of money per play that you play. If you're the later you get drafted or go undrafted, the more you play, the more money you make. So I would get bonuses in the offseason for – I'd get a check for $150,000, $200,000, sometimes more than that. And it's a great way for those guys to be able to make some bonus money.
It does not act as a disincentive, right, to win games. I mean, typically, like in your case, what you described, if you're in there on plays, that means somebody thinks you're helping them win.
Yes, exactly.
Or if you got production bonuses, you know, catches, obviously that's not a disincentive.
No, it's not a disincentive to win or anything like that. It's just they put these bonuses in guys' checks. Some of these incentives are like, you're not going to hit that. But a guy like Rob Gronkowski, he's going to hit it because he's the main part of their offense. So all of his incentives, you expect him to hit. I mean, it would have to really be out there for him not to hit it. And you can see he's making a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and he can make another $2 million in bonus money. He probably will get that.
Probably hit him. All right, we're going to break for the top of the hour, and we return the lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. He'll be joining us in studio. You can phone in your questions and comments for him. We'll revisit the Twitter poll in the third and final hour of the show as well. Come on back. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapped up practice just a little bit more than an hour ago as they get set to travel to New England on Sunday. The injury update, wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin doing okay, according to head coach Sean McDermott, trying to work through his knee issues. He was limited in practice today. He will be questionable for the Patriots game. The same for cornerback E.J. Gaines with his knee. Limited today, questionable for Sunday. Also limited today in the workout, defensive tackle Kyle Williams, tight end Nick O'Leary, and offensive lineman John Miller. No practice today. Wide receiver Andre Holmes, he is out for the game. Bills, Patriots. The Bills needing to win to keep this thing going, and they'll kick it off at 1 o'clock at Gillette Stadium. We've got the pregame coverage on our flagship station in Buffalo, WGR, starting at 11 a.m. and up and down the Bills radio network. New York Giants say they've interviewed former NFL player and personnel executive Louis Riddick for their general manager vacancy. He interviewed late yesterday. He's 48 years of age, 13 years experience in league front offices, working for Washington and Philadelphia and for the Giants. He was a pro scout for the Giants for 4 years before he was promoted to director of pro personnel. The Giants have also interviewed former Carolina general manager Dave Gettleman for their general manager vacancy. Seattle Seahawks were fined $100,000 for violating the concussion protocol with quarterback Russell Wilson in their game on November 9th against Arizona. Because of the incident, the league says it will revise its policy, instructing officials, teammates, and coaching staffs to take players directly to a member of the medical team for assessment once the protocol has triggered. Ryan Shazier making progress in his coping with a severe spinal injury suffered December 4th, according to his father. Shazier underwent spinal stabilization surgery in early December after a collision on Monday Night Football. Hall of Fame broadcaster Dick Enberg passed away last night at his home outside San Diego. He was 82 years old, a versatile voice who spanned the world on networks like NBC, CBS, and ESPN, covering Wimbledon, Super Bowls, and 8 NCAA basketball titles. And the Sabres at home tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers, 7 o'clock face-off. They play at Carolina tomorrow. That's the update from One Bills Drive on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined in studio as we wrap up the end of the week, the final hour of the week, by our buddy Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown as the Bills get set to take their lowdown to Foxborough to play the Patriots. Good afternoon. Merry Christmas.
Good afternoon. Happy New Year. How you guys doing?
We're doing okay. Doing family great. All set for Christmas?
Everybody's good. Got all our gifts. I think we have to get one more gift for our daughter, like we did a gift exchange with the kids. So they all picked the kids. So we got to take my son to get one for his sister.
Gotcha.
My wife's gift came in today. Luckily, I couldn't find the confirmation number, so I thought I did not order it. So I was kind of panicking, but it showed up. So
came in on the back of the car carrier. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, somebody put it in my locker today, so it was there. So I'm glad.
So it's not a car.
Yeah, no. It's definitely not a car. It's not a car. And then Laura's taking care of me. She's gonna wrap it for me. So she's awesome.
Okay. Is it bigger than a bread box? I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely not a bread box. I learned that lesson a long time ago. But, yeah, other than everything is good outside of, Donald trying to get at me as soon as I walk in here. One of my guilty pleasures in life is to watch Ratchet TV, So I watch, The Housewives. I watch Love and Hip Hop.
You watch that stuff?
And yeah, I just like ratcheting sometimes. So, and the producers drive a lot of that. So this is what I want to know. Does Jay tell you to come at me every time I come? Because each week you say something smart.
To be honest with you, he does.
Yeah, he does. So I figured that. But, I'm going to be the bigger man. And I'm just – since we're in the week of Christmas, you came at me kind of funny out there. I don't know about what.
I wasn't paying attention. All I did was go get a brownie.
But it's okay. I just want to let you know I love you. I brought you a nice wing hat. I told you my guy took care of me. So Merry Christmas.
Wow. But look, thank you for the Christmas gift.
So I'm hooking you up. It's Christmas time, so we're not going to argue today. We're going to show the people what it's all about, okay?
But all I did was go get a brownie.
No, you did more than that. You did more than that. You said something smart. See, you don't even realize what you're saying to me. But it's okay.
I don't sometimes.
Is that a brand new hat? That's not the one.
Oh, no, it's brand new. It's not the one that I got earlier.
Sparked this whole thing.
Yeah, no.
That's pretty.
No, that's new.
Donald, that's big. That's pretty new. Big.
Yeah.
This is big.
And he gets to keep it.
I'm gonna cry a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. That's unbelievable. He did that for Donald. That's cool.
You, you guys will be back home, hopefully celebrating a victory.
Right.
On Christmas Eve. So do you cook? What do you do?
Well, normally, Christmas Eve, obviously, we're going to be playing. We normally have, lasagna, mm-hmm. and then we open up one present, which normally is pajamas, and mm-hmm. watch Christmas movies. And then Christmas Day, my wife does a big brunch every year, and then open up the present with the kids, and that's kind of our ordeal, what we like to do each and every year.
Ordeal, did you call it?
Ordeal. Ordeal, whatever you know.
Okay. Will you have?
You make it sound like it's difficult. Oh, not again.
No, that's just what we do. That's our tradition. I guess it's a better word. That's our tradition every year.
I'm trying to bail you out there, as a matter of fact. here we go again.
Do you have? Do you guys have dinner on Christmas Day?
No, brunch.
Will you go over to somebody else's house or something like that?
No, it's kind of – Christmas is a little bit more low-key. So normally we might invite a couple of people over for brunch. But after that, we're just chilling, letting the kids play with their boxes because that's what they end up playing with, the box and not the toy, and just hanging out and enjoy each other's company.
There are two games later in the day on Christmas Day. And I saw that on the schedule this week, and I thought, thank goodness that's not us. That would be the worst, right? Spending Christmas Eve on the road in a hotel and then waiting around all day to play like at 4 o'clock and – getting home at midnight on Christmas night, that would just wipe out the whole holiday.
Yeah, it's hard, but you make adjustments. I've played on Christmas before.
Have you?
I've had to practice on Christmas before. So, you just make it, the adjustments around your time, and either you celebrate when you get back that Tuesday, it's Christmas. I know it's not the same, but, you got to make the best of what you're given.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us for the lowdown as the Bills get set to head to Foxborough tomorrow, play the Patriots on Sunday. This question came up for Sean McDermott early today, and I want to get your sense of this, the playoff talk. And there's people who have made a living this past week kind of going through all of the different scenarios. How much does that leak? Do you guys sit around in the locker room and say, hey, do you know if Baltimore wins and if Tennessee wins this one, and then, I mean, do you spend any time on
that?
No,
we don't talk about that. I mean, obviously, I've seen some of the stuff, and it's so complicated. I mean, I can't even wrap my mind around it. So just take care of business. Win the two games. You put yourself in a position to do it, and whatever happens, happens. I mean, that's what you got to do. Just worry about, you know, beating the Patriots, and then once we do that, moving on to Miami. Mm-hmm.
How much time do you spend looking back at 3 weeks ago, the first game against New England?
Obviously, you want to look at what they did against us, what we did well against them. You know, obviously, you don't want to say exactly the same. You know, you put in some new wrinkles here and there. But they haven't changed too much. Obviously, that Miami game is a little bit of a nuance for them because Gronk didn't play.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we know that's their main guy. They're going to reinsert him back into in the puzzle like they did last week against Pittsburgh, and that's their go-to guy, and really feature him in all phases of the game.
Do you even watch that game, being that they didn't have Gronk in that game?
Well, you watch it for other things, you know, rushing the pass or some of the backs, the runs. Right. You just understand that people that got balls in that game, they're going to be going to 87 instead of, you know, maybe 14 or 80 or 28, you know, because obviously Gronk is their biggest target, their best target, and is the guy that you really need to neutralize if you want to give yourself a chance.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. If you'd like to join the conversation in the next couple of minutes, you can ring us up, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Gronkowski has been the man all season, but particularly in the last couple of weeks against you and then last week against Pittsburgh. I think he's got 315 yards receiving over the last 2 weeks. I see that he's not on your list on the lowdown, which is fine, and we're going to get to your issues in a second. that's fine. But what do you do with him? How many different things, looks do you have to show at him, or what's the best way to try to slow him down?
You know, when you watch him, it's not like he's running by a guy. He's just a hard matchup. He's a big body, but you see guys – I think he's slippery than most guys give him credit for. So you see guys trying to jam him, and he's so tall, he just goes over him, and now he's by you. Now you're trailing, and you're panicking, especially in that Pittsburgh game when you watch that last two-minute drive there. You're just being too aggressive. You just want to kind of stay in front of him, be a nuance. I think Trey did a great job of doing that last time, being physical but not being overly aggressive to where he could just get by you. And just be like a gnat. Be always around him, you know, and try to get the ball out. And, of course, him being a great player, he's going to make some plays. Mm-hmm. But you can't let that deter you or get your confidence down. You got to continue to come back because Trey, at the end of that game, came back and got a pick on him. So you have to have that type of mentality that is going to be a four-quarter competition. It can't just be, oh, he beat me the first time. Now, I can't do nothing with him, coach. Yeah. I need help. Yeah. Just come back. Trust your technique, and then you'll eventually get a win. But you got to be able to compete with him for four quarters.
Now, the thing about that first game, you know, he's complaining when he tried to justify the hit on Tre'Davious about, oh, I was getting grabbed and held all day. He had 9 catches for 150 yards.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. How do you measure
success?
Well,
that's what they do.
I mean,
all receivers, tight ends, they don't want to be touched. I mean, the rules are in their favor now. And if any time that the refs let you play a little bit and you get extra physical, you see it always around the league. Oh, he's grabbing me. I mean, it's at some point it is football too. And if you're going to be able to push off, I need to be able to be physical with you. And obviously he's at a point in his career where he does that a little bit. He may get a call later. So I think some of that is gamesmanship and just trying to get a call later in the game.
You hear a lot of people talking about being physical with Gronk. Have you seen teams play him a little bit differently where they're not physical at the line of scrimmage? Maybe they back off and allow him to possibly get into his route. Have you seen teams play him a little bit differently? Because
everybody
says you got to be physical.
Yeah, everybody you try to do a little bit differently. I mean, I don't want him running in space either.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting his route, catch the ball, and go. So, you know, physicality is not always just jamming him and, you know, knocking him off his route. You know, it's, you know, hitting him when he gets the ball. It's, you know, like I'm saying, being in great position, just being a gnat and on him, and just so he can't just feel like he's just comfortable and can catch anything because he knows that there's no physical presence around him, if that kind of makes sense. Just having tight coverage. Mm-hmm. He's running free a lot, which is, you know, it's hard to watch because, like, you know, he's getting the ball.
You wonder, right? You're
right.
Like, how is this dude so open?
Right.
Why is he open? We know that they want to go to Gronk. Why is he wide open?
Yeah, I mean, and it happens over and over and over again.
Right, so how much – I'm not saying you need an assist from officials, but we were talking earlier about in that first game, I thought Gene Steratore did a pretty good job of letting guys play, not calling too many holds, and especially on Gronk, I guess. You don't know what you're going to get out of Craig Rolstedt this Sunday. Maybe you do. But you almost need officials who are going to let guys play. If they start throwing early flags for incidental contact or something like that, then anybody would have trouble covering that way. Right?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, if they're not going to let you be physical and, you know, maybe extend that 5 to 6 yard, you know, range where you can jam a receiver, because a lot of times he'll run into you and use that natural contact to push off, you know. So it's just hard sometimes. And so if they let you play, it's easier to cover guys. Yeah. I mean, it's just a natural, because you know, okay, I can be extra physical. I can maybe tug a little bit because they know he's pushing off and they're going to let both of us play. And whoever, you know, makes a better play on the ball is going to win that down. So we'll see, you know, early in the game.
I was just
about
to say, how deep into the game will you be able to figure that
out? You find out that probably in the first 2-3 series as far as, you know, how lenient they're going to be. And that's overall as efficient. They're going to call a lot of holding, a lot of grabbing and tugging. You know, special teams are going to be throwing a lot of flags. You can kind of figure that out after the first 2 or 3 series, if they're going to be flag happy or not.
We're with Lorenzo Alexander, his Friday appearance with the lowdown. Before we get to the lowdown, going to work in a phone call here from Jose in Buffalo. Go ahead, Jose. You're on the air with Lorenzo.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Lorenzo, you're one of my favorite recent Bills players. I hope you retire a Bill. I just want to say that.
Thank you.
Second of all, listen, Ruben Brown said it perfect yesterday. We got to play between the whistles. Between the whistles, we got to play nasty, physical. I don't care if it's the offensive lineman. I don't care if it's Brady, Edelman, Cooks, whoever it is, whoever has the ball, hit them, make them basically think twice about catching the ball or going to that spot or whatever, Gronk. And I don't want to – I want to say this. It's almost like Gene Steratore just basically was like – he took it back to like Hackershack. I mean, you know how Gronk is a physical player, so – if he's going to play, you know, physical, it should be up to the defense to play physical with him. So I just wanted, as Buffalo Bills fans, I know for a fact that I want to see some nasty play. I want Brady hit at least 10-15 times. So.
Man. All right, thanks.
That's what we all want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact of the matter is, even when Brady gets sacked, a lot of times he doesn't even get hit. He's just like, all right, I'm going
to
go ahead
and take
that.
Well, he learns how to take them.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm going to just go ahead and go down so I don't take
his
hit.
It's like Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, those guys, they don't really let you tee off on them. They kind of roll with it, or they just get down and give it up to you once they feel you tug them or pull at them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's right about getting after Brady. I mean, those are the times where their team struggles offensively. If you can frustrate him, get to him, get him on the ground, disrupt their offense and their rhythm, it's definitely going to give us a chance to win that game. And that's really been their Achilles heel, or his Achilles heel, throughout his career. When you, especially in big games, think about the Super Bowl last year until they figured out a way to win that. I mean, Atlanta's defensive line was getting after him, the Giants, two Super Bowls. You know, those defensive lines were getting after the offensive line and getting after Brady, and he was frustrated all day. So, I mean, that's really the key.
He's about a 40-year-old quarterback, superstar quarterback. That dude does not want to get hit.
No,
that's what it is.
Even on film, when you watch it, I mean, somebody's not really grabbing. They grab this, and he just roll. He just take it. Like, I ain't pulling straining nothing.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody going to catch me up
and
when somebody else come in. Yeah. So, it's an easy sack, but, you know, he's doing it so he can get down.
For real.
Lorenzo Alexander with a lowdown, and that takes us right into your first topic. You've got a theme in mind of how to play against these Patriots, huh?
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, I think this is a theme of a lot of defense, you know, smart, fast, physical, and really doing that for 4 quarters. I think this team is obviously is a well-coached team, and we played a great first half, but we didn't play a great game. And you have to have those three components throughout your game, being smart, fast, and physical, whether it's playing well, understanding your assignments, not making any mental errors, because it's already hard enough to beat them. So when you start beating yourself, it's definitely hard. And then playing fast, you got to understand your assignments, where you need to be, so you can have great tight coverage. You're not thinking, are they going to run this route? You already know it because of your preparation all week. And those things are going to give us the edge and give us the opportunity to put ourselves in a position to win the game.
You were around last year when it was difficult for most of the season for that defense to play fast, right?
Yes.
You've kind of cleaned that up in a large way this year. You haven't solved every problem.
Right, yeah, you haven't solved everything. And I think that's just the natural ebbs and flows of a football season anyway. Yeah. But just from schematically, the way our defense is installed, it's a lot more simpler. And there's not as many checks or, you know, things that kind of overlap from one week to the next and are not too close together. There's real black and white now, and I think that's why guys are able to play faster. Obviously, there are times where we should obviously tackle better and execute better, but those things are just ebbs and flows of a season and, you know, not always going to, you know, make the play that you should make.
Have you played against Brady where you feel like he knows exactly what you're doing on defense and that will throw you off in your mind?
Have
and
I?
Now, yeah.
Yeah, I've done it. He hasn't done it recently, but, I mean, it's a couple of times early in my career where I was out there and he was just out there cool and calm and was like, my boy Reed Dowdy plays safety. He's like, 37's coming on the blitz. 56 is dropping out. Slide the protection left. Oh, yeah. Damn, how did he know?
That's back when they were stealing signals.
Who
and,
is
right?
coming?
Right? That's back
yeah,
when
well,
they were
I don't know. I guess. I don't know. Was they signaling into his helmet? Like, they coming? Yeah. I don't know, but he was doing it.
Right.
And it threw me off.
That's
like,
what I'm saying. Because
people
now
look
you're
around. Should we check? Should we check?
Right. So now that's throwing you off on defense. Yeah. You're like, yo, I don't. What do we call?
Right. last time we played him, he hasn't done that. He hasn't done that this first game, and I didn't play him last year because he was hurt or suspended. So we'll see if he's able to pick some things up.
Yeah.
But I always love that game and shit back and forth, you know. Cause I guess they even had that highlight last week when Clay Matthews was telling – Cam Newton, they about to run. You know, seeing that type of stuff in that gamemanship is real cool.
I'm telling you, it's the worst.
Film, huh?
Yes, it's the worst thing in the world to be on offense and you hear them say they doing this, and you're like, oh man.
No, you already defeated. You already defeated. Yeah,
you're like, please check.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? The quarterback just like, Chad Hutt. You're like, let me go ahead with the play.
I'm about to get blown up.
Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown, part two. And this is, I came across this. You've obviously discovered this. Patriots are really strong defensively in the red zone.
Yes.
And the Bills have been pretty good offensively in the red zone, but something's got to give in this game, right?
Right, and that comes down to execution. I think last time we played them, we had a great first drive.
Yeah.
Went all the way down and throwing an interception.
Right.
First half, we did a great job of making them kick field goals. In the second half, defensively, we started giving up touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And you definitely have to win more of those battles or not, especially against a great offense, making them kick field goals because they get frustrated. I mean, when you're a high-powered offense, you want to score. Mm-hmm. And so you get frustrated, maybe you lose your poise a little bit, try to do too much. And, you know, over the course of the game, if we can continue to make them kick field goals, it gives our offense a chance to put up more points than theirs.
And finally, and this is my favorite topic because this is what I think the key is, take the ball away against this team. The Patriots last, what was my stat? Last three games, Brady has four interceptions and only two touchdown passes.
And let me say this. I guess they need to be timely interceptions. You know, a team can overcome an interception or a fumble recovery in the first quarter. But looking at, like, I think the Miami game and also the Pittsburgh game last week, in crunch time, two-minute drill, and it was going down, a corner had a chance to intercept the ball and dropped it. Or a fumble was on the ground and they didn't recover it. So it's really
opportunistic.
There we go. Thank you, brother. See, Christmas. Help me out. I can't even get it out. Turnovers. Okay. You know, say the word again and I'll finish the sentence.
Opportunistic. Right?
Yeah. Turnovers there that we go. Need to get. Right. You know, we're working together.
See,
now.
We finish each other's sentences. We start out arguing and then by the end of this thing,
tear my eyes.
Yeah. So we need to be able to do that's when you really need to have the interceptions because those are game changers. Those seal the deal and, ultimately stop their offense and puts our offense back on the field.
Bills defense has five takeaways in the last four games, three last week. You're on a pretty good pace to do that.
Yeah, I mean, just got to continue to put pressure on the quarterback. I keep telling these DBs, especially Mike, I need to take me to the Pro Bowl with them because I've caused a lot of these interceptions for these guys. So, yeah, just continue as a defensive front, you know, make the quarterback throw in errant passes. And those guys have done a great job all year of, capitalizing, taking the opportunity to pick those balls off.
How about that back end of your defense? And you think about it, going into the season, all new. Everybody absolutely new. I mean, there's still two games left and an awful lot to play for. But when this season is over, that will be, I think, one of the major storylines of the year, how well the back end of the defense
did a great job. I mean, obviously, Sean and Brandon have done a great job of scouting these guys and signing the right guys. You know, smart, athletic guys that understand how to play football. Wasn't your biggest names out there.
Right.
But they came in, gelled it well. Have great chemistry. I think Bobby Babbage and Gil have done a great job of coaching those guys up, and they communicate and do a great job of working together and playing off each other, especially the relationship that Jordan and Micah have. It's really special, and just to see them operating off the field and how it really translates to on the field as far as getting everybody lined up.
Sharice Wright caught an interception last week and is running it back.
Yes.
And Micah knocked the ball out. Now, he dribbled it to himself, but
Micah
were close.
It out?
Yeah, Micah knocked it out.
Oh, yeah. You know what? On that play, it was crazy. I didn't know which way Sharice was going to end up running.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out.
So I see you trying to run.
I'm trying to figure where you – oh, did he coming at me? I'm like, Micah knocks it out. Ball hits me in my face. I'm like, oh, we got to get on this. I didn't know who hit it out.
I mean, what were you thinking when you seen the ball come out? You're probably like, go. What are you doing?
I couldn't get a block, man. I felt like a Dolphins out there just in the way. You know, I couldn't figure out who to block. You know, receivers behind me kind of pushed me.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it wasn't one of my highlight moments. Because I'm looking to blow somebody, and then you see 11 there. Oh, where is it? Get on it. I need it, you know. Cover him up.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I'm just glad we got the ball.
Speaking of a Dolphins, you know, we had the big penalty. What did you guys say to a Dolphins?
It's not going to be tolerated. I mean, just one of those times, you know, a young guy just makes a boneheaded, you know, move. I think Kyle pulled him aside. Some other guys, just that's not going to be allowed. I mean, because you're hurting the team at that point. Mm-hmm. We had stopped them. I think they're going to kick a field goal.
Yeah.
And now we had to go back out there and try to stand up for, you know, another four plays or three plays and try to make him kick another field goal. So it put points on the board. And I think he learned from it, understands that. And, you know, moving forward, just can't make those type of mistakes.
Lorenzo, your team wrapped up the home portion of its schedule last Sunday. 6 wins, 2 losses, best home record since, what did we say, 1999? Last time in the playoffs. You must feel, again, the season's not over, but that's another thing that has gone well this year and something you guys can hang your hat on as far as what you accomplished this
season. Yeah, those are things that you can build on, that you want to be able to, you know, defend our dirt is what our mantra is. Ultimately, you want to be going 8-0, but 6-2 definitely gives you a shot, and you got to figure out, you know, how to win half your away games. I think right now we're 2-4 on the road. So I mean, yeah, you win half your games, you're going to be in the playoffs, you know? So that is part of a growing culture and a change of culture as far as, you know, how to get in the playoffs. It's kind of the blueprint. So that's something that we have an opportunity to do and starts this week against the Patriots. It's going to be a tough matchup, but we all ecstatic about it and go out there and play physical.
Good luck to you. Thank you very much for coming by. And Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Yeah, thank you. Merry Christmas to you guys as well.
Okay. Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown every Friday. He'll be back with us next Friday as well. Donald and I coming up with more in a moment, including Coffee with the Coach, Chris Brown with Sean McDermott. That's up next on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Happy holidays to all our Bills fans, especially our season ticket members. We appreciate your support. Thanks for being the best fans in the NFL.
Happy holidays, Bills fans. This is Micah Hyde. I especially would like to thank our season ticket members for your support throughout the year. That's why Buffalo has the best fans in the NFL.
Happy holidays to all our Bills fans, especially our season ticket members. We appreciate your support. Thanks for being the best fans in the NFL.
Now, Stephen Hauschka, that last voice that you heard, Preston Brown, before that. Welcome back to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Happy holidays. We get to say that, right? Happy holidays to you.
Happy Merry Christmas. Yeah. Happy New Year.
Well, we got a week. Oh, you won't be here next week.
Yeah, so Happy New Year to
happy
everybody
year
out
you
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Happy vacation week to you.
Thank you.
Injury report is out for the Bills game on Sunday. No big surprises here, but we'll go through it with you. The Bills have listed as out wide receiver Andre Holmes with his neck injury. They've got a number of players questionable, including wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin with his neck injury. Benjamin was limited today. Cornerback E.J. Gaines, questionable for the game. He was limited in practice today. Offensive lineman John Miller with his ankle, questionable for Sunday's game. He was limited today. Tight end Nick O'Leary, questionable with his back injury. Again, he was limited. Kyle Williams, questionable with his groin injury. He was limited today. And full practice for Nathan Peterman and Deontay Thompson. And so you're caught up the Bills' injury list. Oh, LeSean McCoy did not practice today, we should mention. But he's not on the injury report, just a rest day for him. It says rest/knee.
See? What did I say earlier?
What?
We need you to rest up because Sunday is going to be a long day. So you're gonna rest up today, rest up tomorrow while we travel. Sunday, be ready to go.
He knows that, right? He's got.
Oh, he
that
knows. Yeah, he knows. In his mind, he knows he is a big part of this offense. So
he has to.
So he has to make sure that he is doing everything that he has to do every week to be ready for the game, so that he's not getting out there. Because you go into certain games as a player, and you're like, I just don't have it today. I'm sluggish. I don't feel right. And so that's why you have guys like Lorenzo talk about having a certain regimen mm-hmm. that he goes through every week. Because if I change it up, let's just say I'm someone who doesn't eat meat, and then I change it up, and now come Sunday, I feel, man, I just feel tired or something like that. And in your mind, it's like, is it that one piece of chicken that I had? I went and had a wing. Is that one wing really messing with me? So you're thinking about other things because you feel sluggish. So LeSean McCoy has to make sure that he's ready to go on Sunday because they're going to need him to have a big game.
You got the day off today. We'll see what it looks like on Sunday. What would be the biggest impact? What would have the biggest impact in a Bills victory, potential victory over the Patriots on Sunday? That's our Twitter poll. Been up for a couple of hours, and it's been fairly consistent through these first few hours. More than half of you, 56%, say forcing two or more turnovers would have the biggest impact in leading the Bills to victory on Sunday. 20% say the big day from LeSean McCoy, 150 or more total yards of offense from Shady. 20% of you say keeping Gronk out of the end zone, holding him to no touchdowns, would have the biggest impact. 4% think something else. Give us a call, 803-0550, the number. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter to let us know what you think. Larry calling from Amherst. Go ahead, Larry, you're on the air.
Well, John, my thoughts are sometimes you need to think outside the box, the way the Bears did with the refrigerator in the backfield, the way Miami did with going with the Wildcats for a while. And I'm like to ask you if you feel if the Bills could think outside the box, and when the Patriots are in the red zone, if they're in the red zone, we cover him with Kelvin Benjamin. You have a tall wide receiver against a tall tight end. I think in this particular case, you might have an even advantage in that case.
Cover Gronkowski?
Yes.
I wouldn't do it, Larry. To my knowledge, Kelvin Benjamin probably has not played defense since he was in high school. He's already limping around on a knee trying to get himself ready to be a part of the offense. I'm not opposed to thinking outside the box, but I think that would be bizarre. I just do.
Yeah, you're not going to, Larry, you're not going to put so not on this team. You're not going to put someone on defense that hasn't played defense. I don't know if Kelvin Benjamin has ever played defense, maybe in high school, you know. So that's just not something that you would do right now in this game. You have to rely on the guys who have been doing it all year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the game plan that we have. Now, they might do a couple of different things that the Patriots might not have seen all year. They might do something like that and think outside the box that way, but not to put – Kelvin Benjamin or Logan Thomas, who we heard earlier this week. Yeah, that's just not things that really make sense.
Let's go to Edric in New Jersey. Good afternoon, Edric. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys, gentlemen, doing?
Great.
Happy holidays, first of all. Thanks for having me on. It's been a while. I've been trying to call in for a while, but you guys are busy, man. You guys are getting very popular, man, but that's a good thing for you guys. you know, guys, I'm going to be pretty specific with the things we need. I know it's going to sound weird, but I really do believe, one, we have to get over 24 points on the board. For sure. 24, 27, 31. We have to score 14 of those points before half. We have to. Because I feel like if we start out sluggish, they're going to get out ahead of us, and then they're going to run the ball, and we're not going to be able to really come back and have a chance in that game. We have to get ahead. We have to be winning maybe 14-13, 14-10, 14-7 for us to have a good chance. Again, 14 points down has to come at half, before the second half. And then thirdly, we need at least two turnovers. One turnover will not do it. Stealing one possession from the Patriots with our offense and our defense won't make a difference. We have to steal at least two to hopefully three possessions from them. And I think that's the only way we can get a good chance at winning that game, because you can't stop Gronkowski. You know, when he's in the zone, you can't stop him. There's no way around it. You know, he's just that good. And putting Kelvin Benjamin on him is going to be the worst thing you can do. You know, but again, that's what I feel we need to do. And thanks for having me on, guys. And
okay. Thanks, Edric. You know, the thing I like that he says, Donald, most of all, and he makes good points, is getting off to a good start. You don't want to have to play from behind from these guys. The Bills are, you know, have a tough time throwing the football all the time. They have them all season long.
Right.
And so get off to a good start. Put some points up early. Get one of those two takeaways that Edric talked about. Get one of those early if you can, just to flip the field, change the atmosphere a little bit. I'd be up for all that, especially if it happens early.
Now, one of the things that he brought up there was when they get up, they run the ball. And I think people really sleep on the fact that the Patriots run the ball anyway. They use Tom Brady and they use that passing attack. They get the ball to Rob Gronkowski often, and especially in big-time situations. But this is a team that does run the ball. They always have. But people just talk about Brady and him and those receivers. Yep. But they truly run the ball. Now, how good would it be for them to try to really rub it in the Bills' face, put Mike Gillisley in the game, and the Bills just totally shut him down, force a fumble, something like that? It was just – it would be
– He is prone to fumble. Gillisley has been inactive, you know, healthy inactive for seven to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
A lot of people here, and people we talk about this a lot, Mike Gillisley, who's achieved legend status in some parts of Western New York.
Yeah.
You know, he got the start against the Jets in the season finale last week, and he didn't play well at all. He had like 24 carries for 25 yards or something like that. He went backwards a lot. You know, I think Mike Gillisley is a pretty good player, but I don't think he's a problem solver or a difference maker for the Patriots or for the Bills last year. He produced touchdowns last year, which was great for the Bills.
Right, and that's what he is. He's a downhill runner. He's a good backup, a complement to a LeSean McCoy. And that's why you always hear, and guys want to get, you know, they want to leave and all of that stuff, but the grass ain't always greener, you know. So if he would have stayed here, and I know the whole thing that happened with him being signed and all of that stuff, but if he would have stayed here, he would have been a key contributor to this offense because he would have been a backup to LeSean McCoy and still used in the same role maybe as last year.
You know who does more for the Buffalo offense than Mike Gillisley last year? Travis Cadet. I think Travis Cadet provides more. He can catch it. He's more versatile.
He definitely
I think it's an upgrade from Mike Gillisley last year.
He can definitely catch the ball. And I love to see when they put him in there and he actually brings it.
Yeah.
You know, he catches passes or he brings those runs. He's not producing a lot, but – it's fun to see him get in and get his touches.
There's a call from Doug in Rochester. Go ahead, Doug. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
John, I wanted to make a comment and a prediction.
Okay.
I believe that the late hit on Tre'Davious White by Gronkowski is going to work out in the Patriots' favor this Sunday. If I haven't missed my guess, the Patriots have already alerted the league about their concerns over retaliatory play against Gronk. In turn, the league has advised the referee crew to be on the lookout for retaliatory play against Gronk. I believe if the Bills get anywhere near Mr. Gronkowski, they will be soundly penalized.
I don't.
Oh, there's a perverse reality that seems to surround the Patriots. And the most recent example would be the late hit itself on Tre'Davious White. How can you justify Buffalo being penalized more yards than the Patriots on that play?
Well, in actuality, that was the reaction of Jerry Hughes that resulted in the extra unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. I mean,
I've heard this a lot.
Yeah,
I've heard this a lot. Why were the Bills penalized on that? And that was because you had offsetting penalties, and you had Jerry Hughes react afterwards, and he was the one that got the penalty after everything had already happened. He got that penalty, so he was the one that got the 15-yarder. But for me, the biggest thing was the fact that he wasn't ejected from the game. So if there's something to complain about him not being ejected from the game, not that 15 yards that the Bills got.
That caller. It's almost like the old X-Files show, you know, conspiracy theories. The truth is out there. Come on, man. And you were kind of going that way earlier in the show, too, about how the Patriots always get the calls and the league is in cahoots with the Patriots. I just don't see it. Nobody gets on officials more than I do. I take a backseat to no one in pointing out their mistakes. But for the most part, they're professional. They know how to call a game. They know what went on in the first game. Craig Rolstad and his staff will know exactly what happened here 3 weeks ago in Buffalo, and they don't do it like that. They're professionals. I will give them that much. That's all you got?
I mean, I don't know if numbers-wise, if teams are getting more calls than the Patriots. I don't know if you can prove that, but there are certain things that will happen in Patriots games where you're like, wait, how did that go that way? You know,
that happens in a lot of games.
Yeah,
it does, and it doesn't always. No.
It's
whatever. This
the Patriots,
is how we started
Tom
the show.
Brady, he gets certain calls. Now they got this whole rule because Tom Brady complained because he got his knee torn up. I mean, what are we talking about here? If that was somebody else, would they have made a rule because of that? Probably not.
I don't know.
The fact that Gronk wasn't ejected from the game.
X-Files territory.
I am not in X-Files territory. The fact that he wasn't ejected from the game. The fact that, I mean, there are a lot of things that go their way from the league. Mm. Not just refs in the game, but actually from the league.
They had their quarterback taken off the field for 4 weeks. For what? For smashing a cell phone? Anyway, this is how we started the show. We got to get to Coffee with the Coach. It's presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop. Chris Brown with Sean McDermott. Coffee with the Coach.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Coffee with the Coach presented by Tim Hortons. I'm Chris Brown along with Bills head coach Sean McDermott as the Bills get set for another big divisional matchup with the New England Patriots at Gillette Stadium on Sunday. Coach, thanks for being with us. So we look at the play in the red zone from last week. I know you were happy on both sides of the ball there. But with the offense specifically, it looks like the offensive line is just kind of getting into a nice groove here at the end of the season. How would you assess their consistency of play here down the stretch?
Well, it all starts up front on both sides of the ball. In this case, the offensive line, as you mentioned. I think they're doing a nice job, led by Eric Wood, our center. Yep. And then the continuity that they've been able to develop over the last five, six, seven games has led them to where we are today in the performance they had last week.
Killer instinct is something that some of the players said you addressed at the end of that game because they kind of let Miami climb back in the second half. Do you feel they've effectively received the message to keep their foot down on the gas pedal all the way through a game?
Well, we'll see. I would hope so. Those are valuable lessons and feedback that we get every week. And the feedback was this past week was, hey, when you get a team down, you got to put them away. Tough to do in this league, all good teams. We have to continue to develop that and work in that direction.
Looking at your division game this week, but in general terms, you're facing this team for the second time. You're going to do it again the following week. When facing a divisional opponent the second time around, how do you come about the decision-making process of how much to change or how little to change the second time you face a division team?
Well, that's a complicated formula to try and figure out, hey, what we did well, what we didn't do so well, and build on what we did well, but the things we didn't do well, if we still believe in them, then bring them back into the game plan. If we don't, then let's move aside and bring something else into the game plan. So there's no exact science to it, Chris. Okay. It's more of a feel, and there's a lot of communication around that with our staff.
Okay, appreciate the knowledge. Now it's time for our fan question of the week, where you, the fan, get to ask Coach a question. We go out to our own Lauren Hall for this week's fan question.
Hey, Chris, it's game day here at New Era Field. We're here with Ryan and his dad, Dennis. And, Ryan, what's your question for Coach McDermott?
What do you like to eat for Christmas dinner?
All right, Coach, the Christmas feast. What's on the McDermott dinner table?
Well, I'm a big ham guy. I like myself some holiday ham, mashed potatoes with gravy kind of poured in the middle of the boat, and maybe some green beans on the side. There's nothing better also than leftover ham sandwiches with mayo to boot. So great question. Can't wait for my ham.
Yeah, leftovers are dynamite, no question about it. All right, Coach, thanks as always for the time. Good luck getting a big division win this week.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. This has been Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. Thanks for watching. Merry Christmas. We'll see you next week.
Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills. They probably put mayo on your ham sandwich at Tim Hortons, if you ask. Like, if you're the coach, if you go through the drive-thru.
I hate mayo.
So do I.
Ah.
Ugh. All right, a break here. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Greg Cosell joined us in the 1 o'clock hour today, the analyst and host for ESPN NFL matchup. We asked him, how can the Buffalo Bills beat the Patriots on Sunday? Here's what he had to say.
They're going to have to find some way to create pass plays in this game. Because even if LeSean's able to run for a lot of yards, it's just very hard to score a lot that way. I mean, unless he's going to run for 350-yard touchdowns, which is not likely.
Right.
So, you know, I think you have to find some way to create explosive pass plays. And whether you do that on first down at a base personnel against the base personnel defense of the Patriots, where they'll probably have the slower linebackers, Roberts and Harris, on the field, I think that's what you have to try to do, Murph. It's going to be very hard to win this game just on the defensive side of the ball.
Grant Cosell from ESPN NFL Matchup. Also today, Eddie Royal joined us, 9-year NFL veteran receiver who played college football with Tyrod Taylor. And he talked about Taylor's arrival at Virginia Tech several years ago.
You know, he was a very humble guy from the beginning. Just coming in, he had a lot of hype. He could have walked in with that attitude like, I'm the man, but he didn't. He put his head down and he worked hard and he tried to learn from the guys that were ahead of him. And that's kind of what you want to see as an older guy from a younger guy with a lot of hype coming in. You never know that he was a five-star recruit and came in and busted his butt just like everybody else and didn't expect any special treatment. And that's why we all appreciated him.
Eddie Royal, former Tyrod Taylor teammate. Bills, Patriots, going to be a tough one, Donald. It's a tall order.
Buddy,
let's see if they can do.
It's a tall order, but these guys know what they have in front of them. I expect the offense to come ready to play, especially since you didn't do it in the first game.
Right.
Hopefully the defense just doesn't let down. We need all three phases of this team to come ready to play on Sunday.
Donald, have a great holiday. You got next week off. We will see you here on Tuesday, January 2nd, right?
Yes,
I will
be here then. I'll see you guys then.
Okay.
Maybe I'll get on the call next week.
Come on over. We're back here Tuesday, not Monday, but Tuesday for the next show. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Colton, and Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush. There they are, all of them. Our producer, Jay Harris. Wave, everybody. The John Murphy Show returns Tuesday from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.